is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He's going to come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins. Touchdown, Buffalo! McCoy. Touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive. This is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Back on the air today. Thanks for tuning in today. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Sal Capaccio here, filling in for Murph all week long with Donald Jones. Donald, hope you had a great Tuesday evening. It was beautiful out. What'd you do yesterday after the show? It was so nice outside. Steve Tasker was leaving, and I said to him, "Are you going to play golf?" Yeah. He goes, "I'm going right now." Take me with you.
What did I do? Today's a totally different day.
Yes.
Outside.
Totally.
But I don't even remember what I did yesterday.
Really?
It's kind of bad.
You leave here, you just kind of decompress. Do you have to decompress after the show sometimes?
Sometimes, yeah.
I do.
Yeah, sometimes I definitely do. I think yesterday, though, I did have to run some errands. I had to go to the bank, do a couple of different things. So
basically adult human life things, right?
Normal, I mean, normal stuff.
That's what people do in life. He's a husband, he's a father, he's got to do all this stuff, right?
Exactly.
So yesterday we had lots of great feedback on the program and on the show, and I want to commend you and I want to thank you. What you brought to the table and the explanations of terminology was really, really good. And I got a lot of really good feedback, both internally and externally, by the way. People here that part of the show, you know, they really enjoyed it. But really, you fans out there, people who are listening, lots of really good feedback on Twitter, at Sal Sports, at DA Jones 19, at John Murphy Show. Either way, that was a fun discussion.
It was.
You know, one thing I've noticed, Donald, one thing I've really tried to remember and remind myself is lots of fans just don't know some of the intricacies of football, but they're afraid to ask because they think it makes them sound dumb if they ask. That's
right.
Not the case.
Right. I mean, I think here's the thing. Football is not just, even though it does always come down to basics, running, catching, tackling, ultimately the X's and O's of it can be very complex, you know, and different teams do different things and different guys call plays different ways. There's so much that goes into this in preparation just to play 16 games, you know.
That's right.
So it's amazing when you think about how much these guys have to learn in such a short period of time when these rookies come in and they have to learn so much coming from these offenses in college where they're not doing as much as they do once they get here. These guys have to pick it up. And like you said yesterday, and even like Steve said, they're not waiting for you.
No.
They are not going to wait for you. When you get here, you have to pick that stuff up fast. And it was good to just break down some of the things that we go over.
Yeah, and, you know, we're going to have a couple really, really cool guests today for you. We're going to have Evan Silva. He's been on the program many times, both on this program and other programs on our flagship WGR Sports Radio 550. He's been on with me several times. Evan writes for Roto World, other different outlets as well, but big fantasy football guy. And one of the reasons I wanted to bring him on was he actually wrote some things about the Chiefs recently that I thought were interesting that made me say, maybe the Bills have a chance for a nice pick from Kansas City with that number one pick. But he likes to focus on players, what their possible potential is for fantasy football. And really, that can relate to real football, like how many stats we can look at for Sammy Watkins or LeSean McCoy and what they can expect from them this year. So we're going to have him on at 2 o'clock today. But before that, we're going to get to Warren Sharp. And he has a really, really cool, interesting website and a I guess you'd say a publication. It's not really a book, but you can find it online. You can buy it. You can download it from him. Sharper Football. And it's pretty amazing, Donald. This is a guy who is literally, he's an engineer. And you can think already he's pretty smart, right?
Right.
But he likes to put together, and you know, we use this word analytics a lot, and people shy away from it if they don't like it, or some people are totally into it. What analytics really are just fancy stats, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're more stats on top of stats. But he really delves into some of the really cool analytics issues and stats of football as far as what teams do what by formation, how many teams throw when they are three wide versus two wide, what teams throw more in the red zone out of certain formations. And from that, you can really get a body of work. But that's really what a scouting report is.
That's right. Exactly.
So he basically puts an entire scouting report together for every team and what they did last year. Now we know that things change. The Bills have a new offense this year. But at least we can tell, maybe was LeSean McCoy good out of certain sets last year? Shotgun, under center, three wide receiver sets, fullback, all that stuff. It's pretty cool.
You know, the crazy thing is we always talk about Coach McDermott and how he pays attention to detail,
right?
Like down to the smallest of things. We've talked about how in the draft room, you know, he wants to change where the phone is in the draft room so that he can, I guess, get to the phone quicker. I don't know what his reasoning is behind that, but he pays attention to everything that goes on within this organization and around the football league, right? And so I would think that his scouting reports every week, for people who don't know, every week, game week, when it comes up, the coaches will give the players a scouting report on I play receiver. They would give us a scouting report on the defense, right? Mm-hmm. And so within that scouting report, you have, okay, the defense likes to go cover two on first down. They like to do this on second down. They like to do this on third down. They like to do this in the red zone. They blitz this percentage of times on first down. They do this percentage of times on third down, right? So that they try to break down everything for you. They even give you each player on the team, where they're from, and everything. Like, right. They break everything down for you. Now it's your job to go and watch film and see the small little things that these guys like to do on first down when they're in cover two. But the coaches will give you everything. And I would think that Coach McDermott's is going to be very extensive.
Very detailed.
Yes, very,
very
detailed.
I know I've heard Eric Wood speak many times about he likes to study the opponent specifically he's facing this week and what tells he might have.
Yeah.
If he puts his right hand down versus left hand down, if he leans one way or the other, where his eyes might be, all those little things. How quickly does he like to snap? Does he try to guess the count? All really tiny things. Did you like to do that with corners you might be facing?
I like to see just like first step movements. Yep. And if I do this move, how does he try to counter that move so that I have a counter move to his counter move, right? And those are the things that I like to watch. Or even, you know, the safeties, I would watch the entire back end of the defense because pre-snap they might be in a cover two shell, which is two high safeties, two safeties deep. But then once the ball snaps, they rotate into now they're playing cover three,
right,
and the corners drop out. You know, so I like to watch all of that stuff. But for me, it was really just watching the small things that corners like to do and how they like to play certain players.
Which corners gave you the most problems and which did you enjoy playing against? Not specifically, I mean style and size.
Style – I mean, the corners that are taller and linkier, you know, they can sometimes give you problems just because they like to get their hands on you and they have those long arms.
Because you're a bigger guy, though.
Right.
I bet you if you were a smaller guy in the slot, you might prefer those guys. You can kind of
get under
them.
Right, because you're quicker. So those guys that like to get their hands, I was more physical, so I just had to be more physical than they were being. And guys like, I mean, Revis always gave everyone
fits.
He's
just great.
Pat Peterson was –
What makes those guys great?
Revis was – what made him great was just his attention to detail and his technique. Like, he was so good in his technique that, you know, it doesn't – and he could recover. So if you beat him off the line of scrimmage, he would baseball turn it and be right there with you. You know, and for those who don't know what baseball turn is, and when the defense is playing man and you break them off the line of scrimmage, you beat them off the line of scrimmage, they will baseball turn all the way around and catch up with you. Revis was so good at that. He would always be right there. You know, he just was very good at his
technique. So literally doing a 180, not a 360, a 180.
A 180.
From looking into the offensive backfield to running back, facing the other side of the field.
Exactly.
Not
you
just
know,
running
when
backward.
When you watch baseball, you see a center fielder or a right fielder, they'll turn all the way around and run to track down a ball. That's a baseball turn in football. The DB is actually turning all the way around to track. He's doing a 180, like you said.
Was there – when you had that big game against New England, was there one guy that was on you that you beat a couple times, or were they rotating and you had a few different? Do you remember?
I had a couple big games against New England.
Yeah, you did. The one at home that we came back here in 2011.
Right. Devin McCourty was sticking me.
Yep.
He was still playing corner.
Yep.
And I think shortly after that season, they moved him to safety, you know, because he played corner in college and he was good at corner in college. But they moved him to safety because once he got here, he couldn't cover the same way. And he's done a very good job for them. He's been, I guess, all pro and everything for them at safety. But it's not the same, you know. And when we played them here in 2011, when we beat them, he was covering me a couple of times, and I beat him deep, you know.
Right.
And it just wasn't a good day for him.
No, I understand that. You know, those guys you're talking about, Revis and Patrick Peterson, there's an old saying that DB coaches like to teach DBs, run the route for the receiver, right? Run the route for him.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think, when I watch them, they're running the routes for you. It's like – it's almost like they know the route for the receiver better than the receiver knows. So if they study enough, they're going to be able to run to the spot where the ball is coming even better than the receiver may get there.
Right. That's why receiving coaches try to teach you to run everything the same way. Even if you're running a guy off, if it's a blocking play, take the same steps. So you never give one thing away. You know, now you obviously you need to have different moves along with that, but you try to run everything the same way. and you break everything off. So if I run a hitch, my stem on a hitch, my first release and everything is the same way as if I'm running a curl or if I'm running a slant or whatever it is, so that they never know exactly what I'm doing.
803-0550 if you want to jump on board. I talked about yesterday's show. It was really good from a lot of feedback from you, and some people said they hadn't listened to it. So if you want to do that, you can always go to buffalobills.com/John Murphy Show. You can check it out in the John Murphy tab there. You can also go to WGR550.com, click on demand audio. Anytime you want to re-listen to one of the shows or a segment or an interview we have, we always have that available to you. And if you really missed that yesterday, you should probably go back and do that. It was in the first hour, and I know a lot of people really tweeted me and said, wow, that was really good. It was educational. They learned something. So we're here for that. Hopefully you learned something. Today, well, a little bit more opinion-based than trying to teach you some things, but we're going to maybe teach you about some of the teams that have not been as successful in the AFC, specifically teams that did not make the playoffs last year. We're going to try and focus today on the AFC non-playoff teams last year, and really if any of these teams can take the next step, Donald, really contend for the playoffs. We talk about the Bills every day. So, of course, they're one of the teams, but we're going to steer clear from them right now. We can talk about them, obviously, as we go forward. But really, we're talking about the non-playoff AFC teams outside of Buffalo who you might think might be able to sneak up into a playoff spot. It's hard to do that in the AFC. It's hard when you have Tom Brady basically every single year dominating, getting the playoffs. When you have Kansas City pretty much every year, aside from here or there, an outlier, Andy Reid doing what he does and winning 11 games, it seems like, on a yearly basis. It's hard when Ben Roethlisberger is the Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback, right, and they're going to be winning the North or at least getting a wild card seemingly every year. You got to find some room in there. Well, last year, the Houston Texans, the Oakland Raiders, and the Miami Dolphins, those are the three teams that really kind of stood up and got to the playoffs where maybe people either didn't expect them to, or in the case of Houston, yeah, they'd been there before, but you didn't know what they would do based on going into 2016. Of course, the AFC South is not a tremendously strong division, so it only took them 9 wins to get there. But I don't think, Donald, there's going to be really a lot of wiggle room here. I think New England's pretty much a team that's going to be counted on to make the playoffs. Pittsburgh with Ben Roethlisberger and the system they have there. And even Kansas City, as much as we think that they may be, you can't count on Kansas City being bad, right? You can always count on Kansas City being at least good enough to contend and maybe make the playoffs.
Yeah, even with the things that they've done out in Kansas City that would, I don't know, like it does make you scratch your head a little bit. Like
Macklin, yeah, player of the GM.
Right. It's like, what is really going on out there? Right. They trade away a pick for a first round, you know, for the quarterback. It's like, what's really going on? Because a team like Kansas City that was as good as they were last year, I mean, they won that division out there last year. You would think that in the first round they just need one more piece to get them over the hump into the Super Bowl. They would have taken that piece in the first round. They didn't do that. They traded it away and got it all the way down.
Kansas City went up to 17.
Right. They went all the way down.
To 10, 17 spots.
They went all the way down, but they traded away some more draft picks as well,
yep,
you know.
That's
so
right.
It's like, man, what's really going on out in Kansas City? I don't know, but like you said, you can't count them out. Like, it seems like they're always around the playoffs every year.
And that's why I think there's really only room maybe. You know, the South is going to have one team. I can't see maybe two. We'll talk about that, how we go down here. Oakland, oh boy, how are you going to wrestle them away from what Derek Carr is doing in the playoffs? You know, getting to the playoffs with Derek Carr now, I should say. And then Miami's an interesting case. But those were the six teams last year. New England, Kansas City, Pittsburgh, Houston, Oakland, Miami. In that order, those were the seeds. And then you have the teams that did not make the playoffs. You have the teams that are right there on the cusp. So we should, you know, maybe delve into them a little bit here. And I think the one team that seems to be sticking out in everybody's mind that is ready to take that next step, Donald, is the Tennessee Titans. They have what I think a lot of people are counting as a franchise quarterback in Marcus Mariota.
Right.
They just signed Eric Decker to go with their receiving core, who, you know, could very well help them. DeMarco Murray had a nice year last year for them. It seems as though this is a team that they're building for the future. Maybe the future is now, finally, with the Tennessee Titans. But like I said, it might not take a lot even for them to get to the playoffs. We're not talking wild card. They could very well win that AFC South.
Yeah, I mean, their quarterback he's good. You know, we all had those question marks about him when he came out in the first round, but he's really, I think, answered a lot of those questions. He's getting better every year. I think that they have some weapons. If they can, they draft the receiver in the first round. He's been hurt, but if they can get him healthy going into training camp and going into the season, yeah, they have some pieces where they can challenge in that AFC South. And the fact of the matter is the AFC South is so weak, you know, that they should really be able to win that division. Obviously, you have down in Houston Houston has a very good defense, and that's what really carried them through last year. Obviously, they took Deshaun Watson, but I would think that Tennessee can really challenge for that spot in AFC South.
And you know, last year we were all over the guy they wound up taking with the number with their first pick, or Corey Davis. Corey Davis was the wide receiver they took, but you and I loved him. You know, him pairing with Marcus Mariota could be scary for other teams in that division for many years.
Him, Marcus, I mean, Tajay Sharp came on for them last year. They have, you know, DeMarco Murray is down there. So they have some pieces on offense. I think they have a team that can really challenge in a weaker division, you know. And I've always said that since Peyton Manning left the Colts, that division has been up for grabs. Yep. Even once the Colts drafted Andrew Luck, it was like, still, that division is up for grabs. And every team, once a team gets 9 or 10 wins, it's like they're going to be in the playoffs. They're going to win that division down there in the South.
Yeah, let's talk about that division, too, because you have Indianapolis sitting there at 8-8. And really, it might come down to the health of Andrew Luck. Remember what Steve Tasker said, and I agree completely yesterday. You know, we all know that the Colts basically tanked the season to get Andrew Luck the year that Peyton Manning was going to be out.
Right.
As good as he's been, they haven't really been to the playoffs, once? Maybe twice? But my point is they're not getting to Super Bowls. They were at the AFC Championship game a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. That was all Deflategate, where all that started. But even with Andrew Luck and how great he's been and how good he is and how great I think he can be in this league, Andrew Luck, I don't think has carried that team enough to get to the playoffs because it is such a team game. Their defense has let them down at times. They haven't had a good enough running game around Andrew Luck. And by the way, he has been getting pounded on. And that's why he is already hurt headed into 2017, it seems like.
You know, it's crazy because they drafted – we always talk about, man, the Bills haven't been in the playoffs because they haven't had a franchise quarterback in how long. They find what everybody in NFL thinks is a franchise quarterback, and Andrew Luck. Mm-hmm. He's a good quarterback, but they still have only been there, you know, once or twice. And it has a lot to do with they haven't put really – an offensive line around him. Mm-hmm. They haven't had a run game since he's been there. They didn't have really a run game when Peyton Manning was there. And they've never really had a defense that would scare people. Even when Peyton Manning was there, that offense carried that team, you know? So it's like, yeah, you got your franchise quarterback, but you're not really giving him any protection or real weapons around him and a defense across the ball that can help him take this team to the playoffs. So you would think that team would be getting better every year once they found their franchise quarterback. It seems like they're going in the opposite direction.
Yeah, and the Bills play them late in the year this year, by the way, as well. And I'll tell you, that's at a point where could we even be sure that Andrew Luck's going to be on the field for them by then? I mean, he's going to take another pounding again. Yeah. You look at their first two picks, they didn't even draft a lineman. They drafted Malik Hooker, the Ohio State safety, and then they went with a corner with their second pick. So they're giving the defense help because they need it. But here's Andrew Luck, battered and beaten, and yet I don't know if he's going to be able to survive another season behind that offensive line, considering he's already gone through, at the end of last year, I believe he had like some sort of surgery, but you know, there's questions about what his true availability is heading into camp in 2017.
He had like shoulder surgery on his throwing shoulder, I believe, right? So he's there are real questions, and who's their backup? No one knows who their backup quarterback is. I think it's like Scott Tolzien.
It is. Good job. It was, at least. I don't even know if it still is, but you're right.
You know, so it's like, I mean, what are you going to do with that backup quarterback? No defense, no offensive line. You have no team, you know? So I don't see them making it into the playoffs at all.
So you would take, right now, Tennessee to be a team more on top of Indy, as far as if I was to tell you who has a better chance to win that division or make the playoffs, you would put Tennessee ahead of Indy.
Ahead of Indy.
Yes. Yeah. I would, too. I think Mariota, what they're building there, a lot of question marks with Indianapolis. I would do the same thing. But the wild card here is really the Jacksonville Jaguars.
It is.
Because this is a team that was supposed to take this next step last year, right?
Yeah.
So many people loved them. By the way, I mean, I've been wrong on a lot of things in the past. I said last year I didn't like them nearly as much as everybody else seemed to. It just seemed like they weren't the type of defense, I think, that was going to take that next step right away. They got better as the year went on, but they had problems on defense last year.
Yeah.
They came to Buffalo. They had a real good first half. First play of the second half, LeSean McCoy takes it, 80 yards for a touchdown right?
Yep.
I mean, this was their story last year. They were very inconsistent on defense. Yes, they have some nice parts around them, but now they have Doug Marrone as their head coach. They have Nate Hackett as their offensive coordinator. I just don't know what they have at quarterback. I don't know if they know what they have at quarterback in Blake Bortles.
And that's their issue. You know, last year, Blake Bortles, he threw way too many interceptions. And he threw interceptions in, like, key points of the game where they're trying to come back or they're trying to close out a game and he throws an interception. So I don't think they know what they have at quarterback. I think they want to really rely on a strong running game, which is why they took Leonard Fournette.
Yep.
And they would like for their defense to really take the next step because they have a young team. They have a young wide receiver core. They have a young defense. And I think they would hope that Blake Bortles can really come along here this year. Their defense can help to take that team to the playoffs.
They did lose their tight end, Julius Thomas. He wound up going to the Miami Dolphins.
How much did he do for them?
Not much. I don't think he was hurt a lot, right?
Yeah, he was hurt.
He was hurt if I look over this. But you're right. They had injuries at the running back spot. T.J. Yeldon, of course, was a guy that used Chris Ivory.
Mm-hmm.
He was a guy that got hurt several times. I thought he was somebody that they wanted to use.
He got hurt here.
He did. That's right. Hamstring,
he was having a good game
against
the Bills. And he was running all over, and I'm like, oh, man.
He was having a Jay Ajayi type of game,
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
And then he got a hamstring issue. I think. And they brought in T.J. Yeldon. Remember a couple of years ago in London, they had some issues trying to run in short yardage situation. Well, now, like you said, they bring in the big man, Leonard Fournette. And look, I think Leonard Fournette is going to be a good NFL player. I don't blame a team for drafting him in the first round. I just don't know in today's day and age if that's a difference, taking a running back between a playoff team and a not playoff team. If you add that running back, if really that makes the difference for you.
I don't think so, because I felt like, even though Chris Ivory got hurt last year, both he and T.J. Yeldon were having good seasons, good enough seasons to help that team. I think their main issue is their quarterback situation. I think they have a strong young defense. I think they have a solid run game now. They obviously have good young wide receivers on the outside that can make plays for them. Their biggest issue is their quarterback. And until he can come along or they can find another guy that's their franchise quarterback, I don't think they'll be in the playoffs.
They have had Blake Bortles for 3 years. I'm looking over his stats right now. In his first 3 years in the league, Blake Bortles has thrown 17, 18, and 16 interceptions.
That's way too much.
Yeah, he has not improved.
Right.
He has not improved in that regard. 2 years ago, 18 interceptions led the league. 16 interceptions, a year ago, his TDs even went down. I mean, we thought maybe 2 years ago, 35 TDs, a nice number, down to 23. His TD to interception ratio last year, 23 to 16. Now, he's going to go into 2017 as their starter. But I don't know if he's in. I believe they did.
Who's the backup?
I have to look at this. I think they did pick up his fifth-year option. I've got to make sure on that. But that doesn't mean they have to keep him around. You can always, that's not guaranteed except for injury, and that's why they do it. I would not be surprised if Blake Bortles is not their starter either, A, in 2018, or B, even by the end of this year. I wouldn't be surprised if Blake Bortles is not starting for that team.
I wouldn't be either.
By the end of this year.
Especially with Doug Marrone and then Tom Coughlin at the top of.
That's right.
I wouldn't be surprised if he comes out and he starts throwing a lot of interceptions in those first 4 or 5 weeks of the season. They're like, listen, we have to do something soon. Like, we already know we're going to be taking a quarterback in the draft. We have to do something soon and let some of these younger guys get some reps. Blake Bortles, he really has to come on here fast or he's going to be out of there.
So tonight is the ESPYs. And there's lots of awards being handed out. First of all, do you watch the ESPYs?
I do.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's pretty cool. And now it's like on ABC. It used to be on ESPN.
ESPYs a couple years
you did?
Ago. Yeah.
Why'd you go?
I went. This
Were
was
you
the year.
Speaking or getting a
no, no. Actually, I went to a wedding in Santa Barbara. Okay. The ESPYs are obviously held in L.A.
Oh, yeah.
And so, we were just like, hey, let's go to the ESPYs.
All right.
So we went down
there.
You
were able to get – you just, like, contact your agent or something, give me a ticket?
Okay. Contact the agent.
See, it's not what you know, folks. It's who you know. If you have an agent,
you
can get in the ESPYs.
And then
if you don't have an agent,
he'll get you, like, a TV seat.
There
you
go.
So for those who have never been to an award show,
right,
they put certain people in certain seats where the cameras can catch
you. Yes, yes.
You know, so, I sat with Fitz. I sat with, I think – Brad Smith was with us. There were a couple of guys that year. From the Bills. It was cool. It was nice.
Did someone come up to you and say, "Who are you wearing tonight?"
No.
Okay.
No.
They didn't do anything like that. You didn't get that red carpet treatment. That interview about your wardrobe or anything.
I did do the entire red carpet.
Oh, that's cool.
But they didn't ask me who I was wearing. I had on like just a linen. It was hot in L.A.
Wait. You should have worn what you wore to that wedding. Then they would have asked.
I would have sweat so much. They would have asked if I would have worn that. But, I just had on a linen outfit because it was literally, I think I was supposed to be a fat boy I truly believe I was supposed to be a fat boy. I sweat a lot, and it was like 95, 100 degrees in L.A. the night I went to the ESPYs. And we're on the red carpet. I'm like, I can't wear just like a black suit, tux type of thing. I got to go with linen, something lightweight, so I'm not out there sweating.
Well, one of the things I want to do with you today is I want to run through some of these categories, and we'll see if we can pick who you think's going to win and see if you can nail it, okay? But even before I get to that, Donald, a little test for you, all right?
All right.
I'm going to name you. Here are the four nominations – for best female U.S. Olympic athlete. Mm-hmm. You tell me if you can name what sport they even play or participated in the in Olympics, okay? You tell
these
me if you can
Olympics?
Do that. These are all Olympic sports. Like, these are you'll be okay. I think you'll get three of them.
All right.
I think you'll get three out of the four here. That's okay. My prediction, all right? These four people are nominated for best female U.S. Olympic athlete. Can Donald Jones tell me what sports they play? Mm-hmm. Simone Biles.
Gymnastics.
That's right. Allison Felix.
Track and field.
Very good. Katie Ledecky.
Swimming.
Simone Manuel.
Ooh. Swimming.
Are you cheating?
Nah.
You got that?
No,
four for four.
That's
good
right,
job.
Man, come
we're
on.
Getting a high five here. I
now,
know it's
the
on
only
TV,
reason
but...
I got Simone Manuel okay. is because I seen someone tweet about her yesterday and her endorsement since she's and I
honestly
like,
didn't
Simone
know
Manuel.
Simone. I would have gotten the first three.
Yeah, I only reason I got her is because just yesterday I was looking up like her whole profile and life story and everything.
All right, let me see if you can get best male U.S. Olympic athlete what sport these guys play, all right? Might be a little tougher for you.
Yeah.
Ashton Eaton.
Who knows?
Ashton Eaton. Guess. U.S. Ashton male Olympic athlete. What sport?
Swimming.
Wrong. Ryan Murphy.
Wrong.
I'll tell you in a minute. Ryan Murphy.
Ryan Murphy. I got to think of who won what. I don't know.
Give me a guess. Sport.
I'm going to go with something in the gymnastics field.
That is incorrect. Michael Phelps.
Obviously, swimming.
And Kyle Snyder.
I have no clue.
Okay, Kyle Snyder's a wrestler.
Okay.
Ryan Murphy is swimming.
Okay.
Ashton Eaton is a decathlete. Decathlon.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't going to get those.
Shouldn't we know the decathlon? The decathlete's supposed to be like the best athlete.
Right. They are supposed
remember when wasn't Bruce Jenner a decathlete?
He was. But here's the thing. When it comes to track and field, and I don't know if you're like this. I love track and field.
Me
right?
too. I love it.
But when I'm watching it on TV and those big long races come on, I turn the channel. Like I don't want to it's
I know.
It's bad.
I like watching the sprints and I love watching the relays.
Right. That's
the
all
relays
I
are
see.
The best.
The sprints and the relays. Like,
right.
that's
especially
that's
the sprint relays. The 100
right.
the 100 and the 400 is great.
Right.
4x4, but the 4x1 is the ultimate challenge.
I like watching the 1, 2,
yep.
obviously the relays and the 1 and the 2, okay. And then the 400, the open 4, and the relays, and then the hurdles I like to watch
oh,
as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right, we'll play around with this stuff a little bit more with Donald as we go forward. And, of course, we're going to break down more of the AFC teams that didn't make the playoffs last year. We got Warren Sharp coming up at 1 p.m. We got Evan Silva at 2 p.m. Thanks for being here with us on WGR and MSG. It's the John Murphy Show.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
All right, thanks a lot for the tweets coming our way. We'll read a couple of them here. Zach says, Donald is a former outfielder. We call it a speed turn when the ball is hit deep and you have to make the quick adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually a center fielder myself. I just turned.
Knew the term.
Yeah, that's okay. Thank you, though, Zach, if that's what you're calling it these days. When I played out, I was a center fielder and leadoff hitter, and I had to turn a lot, but just turned.
Right.
I didn't think I had a term for it. I remember crow hopping, you know, stuff like that. But thank you, Zach.
Now,
I appreciate that.
Usually in baseball, if you have to turn all the way like that,
yeah,
it's because you misjudged the ball.
That's right, because you're pretty deep anyway. And, and usually you can do it on an angle.
Right.
You know, look. That's gotta hit right directly over your head for you to turn.
For you to turn.
Have
like
to
that.
Run and then relocate.
Those are the hardest to catch
those
in
are
center
tough.
Field. When they hit them directly, it's like, oh, man.
I know. You'd rather have it to your right or left.
Right.
No doubt about it. Pat, thank you, Pat. Luck is 3-for-5 getting to the playoffs. Thank you for that. 49-31 regular season. Their GM was fired this past offseason because of terrible drafting. And really, that was the point we were making. We are not blaming Andrew Luck for the Colts not making the playoffs or for their lack of success, basically, in the playoffs. What we were saying is they have not built a team around Andrew Luck.
They haven't at all. They have not built a team around him, not an offensive line. And you know, I always look at now because I remember for years Dallas Cowboy fans were so upset with Jerry Jones because he kept drafting offensive linemen in the first round. Offensive linemen. And now, look, they have one of the best offensive lines. I don't even know. I mean, Dak Prescott is a good quarterback. Don't get me wrong. I thought he should have went higher in the draft. Coming out of Mississippi State, I was like, this kid is good. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect him to have that type of season. But when you have that offensive line and the running back next to him, you can have a good season if you're sitting back there just throwing wherever you want to throw and
totally
sitting back there looking at the entire field.
I don't know I don't know really how good he is.
Right. I don't know how good he is.
I don't know how good he really is because he has this tremendous offensive line and he has Ezekiel Elliott behind him.
Right. So it's like, how good really is Dak Prescott? But Andrew Luck, on the other hand, I don't really know how good.
It's about Andrew Luck.
Right. I don't know how good he is. I think he can be great.
He has T.Y. Hilton. He has a couple guys, but come on.
If he had an offensive line in front of him and a running back next to him, man, they would have one of the best offenses in the league. He could really – because people have already put him on a pedestal. But we can't see his true potential because he has no offensive line and he has no running game. So because of that, I don't know how good he really is either.
Yeah, I agree with you. And people know I loved Dak coming out of college last year. That was the guy I identified and said, oh, I think he could be good. Never in my wildest dreams did I ever think he could be have the season he had. I just liked him better than most of the quarterbacks, right? He was the guy I thought the Bills should draft. But here's the thing. If the Bills had drafted Dak Prescott, he wouldn't have gotten on the field unless Tyrod got hurt. There was no way he was beating Tyrod out. The only reason we found out about him is because Tony Romo basically broke his back in a preseason game.
Right.
That's the only reason we found out about
Dak. So they lucked up, you know, because they would have still – I mean, look at how long it took them to just – I mean, really, Tony Romo walked away from the thing. Jerry Jones was not trying to let Tony Romo out the door, you know. And even when Dak was having good season, you get 5-6 games into it – there were still those questions of when Tony Romo comes back, is he going to go right back into that starting spot? Like it was, you know, and Dak had to deal with that the entire season. So they lucked up and found a guy in what, the fourth round that he go in, third or fourth round, whatever round Dak Prescott went in. Tony Romo got hurt and they found out who their next guy is moving forward. But we'll see this year, and all indications are in the preseason, he's looked great.
Right.
But we'll see this year because quarterbacks sometimes in that sophomore season, they will slump off a little bit, you know. So we got to see if he can come out and have the same type of season he did last year.
Do you – can I? How old are you? Can I ask that? How old are you?
29.
Do you think you're old?
I think my body is old, but I'm not old.
Lots of guys in the league your age, you think they're – for an NFL player, do you consider 29 old or about, you know, maybe a little older?
He's getting up there. Yeah, it's older. You're up there.
LeSean McCoy is 29 today.
Today?
Today. Today is his birthday. Happy birthday, LeSean McCoy. Shady is 29 today.
You know, here's the crazy thing, and this is a crazy story. My best friend, I was in his wedding this past weekend.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Milford Academy with LeSean McCoy.
Oh, okay.
And I remember when he was going, I was going to Lackawanna out in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and I took him to school. And Milford Academy is in the middle of nowhere. It's in the middle of nowhere in New York somewhere in the woods. And I remember taking him, and they had like – you had the school. It was just like one building. You had classrooms, and then they used classrooms as dorm rooms.
Right.
So they had it like a bunch of beds in a classroom, and that's where all of the guys were sleeping. And we got there at like, I don't know, sometime in the middle of the night, and all of the guys were sleeping. So I'm sure LeSean McCoy was there. He was probably sleeping. It was the funniest thing. But I remember my boy telling me, hey, we got this dude, LeSean McCoy. He's out of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and he's going to Pitt once he leaves here. This dude is a beast. And then next thing you know, I see him at Pitt just shaking everybody out of their shoes.
Yeah.
And, you know, the rest is history. But it's crazy that you say he's only 29 because we talk about LeSean McCoy is getting up there in age. But for running backs, that
29 is – 29 is about – but here's the thing. There's a difference between a LeSean McCoy 29, I think, than other guys. He doesn't run like – he doesn't run like I don't know, what are you going to say, like a LeGarrette Blount, right? He doesn't run. He doesn't put a ton of pounding on his body. Now, he's had a few injuries over the years. You know, people – I did the numbers on this recently, Donald. LeSean McCoy really has not missed many games in his entire career. I think he's only missed 5 games over his, you know, last like 5-6 years or something like that. The point is he doesn't take – and he'll tell you, he doesn't take a lot of shots. The way that he plays – he stays out of that, and I think that's what has prolonged his career and allowed him to be at an elite level. I still think at 29, he's going to put up elite-type numbers this year, and he'll be one of the best backs in the league.
Here's the thing with LeSean McCoy, and I remember when I played in the Senior Bowl, Sam – I can't remember his name. He played running back here.
Sam Gash?
Gash.
The fullback.
The fullback.
Yeah.
So he was the running backs coach for the Lions when I played in the Senior Bowl.
Okay.
And the Lions were our coaching staff. And I remember Joique Bell played in the game with us. And Joique Bell took a handoff, and he went around the outside, picked up like 15 yards, and the defenders were coming, and he ran out of bounds. And Sam Gash was like, listen, we don't run out of bounds in this league as a running back. You take that hit head on. And that is not LeSean McCoy. He is like, listen, I will run out of bounds because why am I going to take that hit?
Right.
You know, and that's something you learn as you get into this league. You know, you got to pick and choose your battles. And that's what LeSean McCoy does. Now, you look at a guy like Marshawn Lynch.
And a lot
Lynch,
of times he'll get low when a guy's coming in. Like, he'll get
he
on the ground.
Right.
He won't take that big shot. And why should he?
You know, and like you said, that is what helps him prolong his career. You look at a guy like Marshawn, on the other hand,
right,
who that is his game. Physical, pounding. He's 31. But Marshawn Lynch, he has a lot more hits on his body than a Shady McCoy, you know. So Shady, if as long as he can make sure those hamstrings are okay, he
yep.
would be able to play for a few more years.
I agree.
At this level.
He has 3 years left in his Bills contract. I think he can play all three. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know financially and where the team is, what happens. We always have those issues come up. But I think he can play three more years in
yeah.
this league. And he wants to. In fact, he has a hashtag on Twitter he's been using lately, hashtag 10K Chase. And he has another one, hashtag 12K Chase.
Hmm.
He can get to 10,000 yards this year. In fact, if he has the exact numbers, Donald, that he's averaged throughout his career, like 74 yards a game or something, he would get to 10,000 career yards by game 14 this year
wow.
for the Bills. He could do that. So
wow.
I think he's going to get to 10,000 career this year. If he wants to get to 12,000, he's probably got to play those extra 2 years, right?
Yeah.
He wants to do it. And I think if there's a guy that can do it, it's LeSean McCoy.
I think he can. The way he plays. And, you know, he can see, like sometimes you watch him run, and there's a guy coming from behind him, and he ducks out of the way. And
right.
it's like, how did he even see that? You know, I played. I caught passes and had to run. And I wouldn't be able to see those guys coming from behind me. I don't know, like, if he has a camera in the back of his helmet or what he has back there. But he is able to avoid big hits. And I think it's going to allow him to play, like you said, another three.
And on top of that,
seasons.
We just played on the MSG side of things. We just played a clip of him in the Jacksonville Jaguars game, the first play of the second half. He outran the defense mm-hmm. 80 yards for a touchdown. Donald, he ran past a safety.
Yeah.
I mean, the safety had an angle, and he separated.
Right.
He still has elite speed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't think of him like Marquise Goodwin or someone like that. But the guy can run, and he's got really good speed once he gets going.
Right. If he stays healthy and he can maintain the hamstrings, he has some hamstring injuries.
Right.
But that's all on now. He really just has to, because he is 29, he has to take care
yeah,
of his body.
Absolutely.
And make sure that he's on top of that stuff. If he can maintain that, he'll be okay. He'll be able to play for a few more years.
And when I go back to the injury point you just mentioned about, you know, missed a couple games, he's played 8 years. He's only missed 11 games in 8 years. That's good for an NFL player, especially
right.
a running back.
Right.
He's only missed. In fact, if you go down the list, obviously 16 games a season, here's his number of games he's played every year. 16, 15, 15, 12, 16, 16, 12, 15. The guy
wow.
plays. So when I read people, and people send this all the time, oh, he's up there in age and he's injury prone. What?
Yeah.
Injury prone?
You know,
because a guy gets hurt in football, he's injury prone?
Right.
No. He's had a couple bumps and bruises like every single NFL player who's ever played.
You know, it's funny when you hear fans say, oh, this guy's injury prone. Like, have you ever played football? You know, everybody gets injured in
right.
football. It's just the point of, number one, if you can play through the injury, how serious those injuries are. You know, I mean, guys they're human beings still at the
right.
end of the day. They're not machines. They're not, like, these dudes are human beings, and they are grown men that are hitting on your body every play, especially at running back. So for him to be able to play that many games every year, he's not injury prone. Yeah, he's going to have bumps and bruises. He might have to sit out a game or something like that,
right.
which is why the backup running back situation has to really clear itself
Correct.
Up once we get into training camp. But this guy's not injury prone.
No, not at all. I remember when people said that Eric Wood had a few injuries early in his career, but none of them were really anything that you would say. Basically, one of them, a guy rolled up on his leg and broke it.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do about that?
Mm-hmm.
Another one, he was getting blocked, and he kind of got pushed from behind. He tore his ACL
right.
in Dallas, right? And then people said, injury prone, injury prone, injury prone. All the guy did for the next, like, 5-6 years was start every game and lead the NFL in the longest consecutive games starting.
Right.
Until he got hurt last year.
You know, playing in the NFL.
Which, oh, by the way, again, was a guy rolling into him.
Playing in the NFL is a combination of, yeah, you have to take care of your body. You have to eat the right things, get massages and acupuncture and all of that stuff so that you don't have soft tissue injuries. But it's also luck involved with this thing. When you talk about injuries, because there are so many bodies flying around on the football field and you're doing something, and next thing you know, you get leg whipped by a running back. As a lineman, running backs run up their legs all the time, you know? So when
That's
people
right.
want to say, oh, this guy's injury prone, he's playing football. Like, he's going to get injured. The what you got to look at is if he can play through those injuries or not. Sometimes you just can't. You can't play through ACL tears and things like that. And it's, you can't sometimes even avoid that stuff.
No doubt about it. 803-0550, 888-550-2550 if you want to jump on board. Got a lot of things on the table today. We're going to talk with Warren Sharp at 1 p.m., Evan Silva at 2 p.m. We're going to talk more AFC non-playoff teams from 2016. Who can take that step into the playoffs in 2017? And my next test for Donald, we got the ESPYs tonight. I'm going to read him names, and he can tell me what sport those names play when we come back on the John Murphy Show.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
All right, back here on the John Murphy Show, Sal Capaccio, Donald Jones, WGR Sports Radio 550, and MSG, of course. All right, Donald, I'm going to ask you real quickly, ESPYs tonight, here is a category, best blank. I'm not going to tell you because it's the best player in this particular sport. I'm going to give you the names. You tell me what is the category, what sport. We're not Olympics anymore, right?
Okay.
So what sport do these people play?
Gotcha.
Andre Blake, Stephon Frey, Matt Hedges, David Vila, and Bradley Wright Phillips. What sport? They are determining the best player in this sport. What sport do those five people play? Andre Blake, Stephon Frey, Matt Hedges, David Vila, and Bradley Wright Phillips.
And they all play one sport?
One sport. Come on now.
I have no clue.
It's 12:50. Come on. Just guess.
I feel like they play like X Games or something.
No, it's a sport. It's soccer. Best MLS player is the category right there with those five. You're not an MLS watcher.
I'm
right?
not an MLS
Neither
MLS
am I.
Watcher. I watch. Neither am I. The only time I watch soccer is the World Cup.
Yeah, me too. Olympics too. But
World Cup, Olympics too.
National stage, USA, right?
Yeah, stuff like that. I don't really watch, especially not Major League Soccer. And even like right now where there's no World Cup or Olympics, the only people you hear about is like Ronaldo and those guys out in Europe. Spain and all that stuff.
803-0550 if you want to jump on board. All right, let's get back to the AFC and the non-playoff teams from last year. We ran through the teams that did not make it from the AFC South, which I think is the up-in-the-air division, really. Any of those teams can challenge Houston to for the title. We don't even know what's going on. Tom Savage is maybe the Houston Texans starting quarterback. We'll see. Let's go to the North, though, Donald, where it seems as though Pittsburgh has a stranglehold on the division, especially since Baltimore and Cincinnati both kind of slipped back a year ago. We know Cleveland is not quite ready to make it yet. But let's start there. We'll start with Baltimore, because last year they went 8-8. This is a team, a very proud franchise, not far removed from their last Super Bowl title just a few years ago, but a team that's gone through some transition and has an aging quarterback. He's not super old. He still can play. He's going to be 32 this year in Joe Flacco. But let's be honest, Joe Flacco has had better years than what we've seen in the last couple of years out of him. And here's the thing I see with them. I just don't know where their playmakers come from. I mean, who are they got? Who are you going to throw to? I mean,
now they have Jeremy Maclin, but
They needed him bad.
Yeah,
because I don't know who their guys are that you're going to rely on to score points. To be quite honest with you,
that's the truth. That's why when Jeremy Maclin, it was like back and forth between the Bills and Baltimore. It was like it made sense for him to go to Baltimore because he knew he would be the number one receiver in Baltimore. Like he knew that, and he knew Joe Flacco was going to get him the ball. Especially, they don't have C. Smith anymore. They needed a receiver down there. So they have Jeremy Maclin. They have, Mike Wallace. They don't have really anybody else that you can say and rely on week in, week out to be that guy. And so, and Mike Wallace really, I don't know if you can rely on him every year either. You know, so they really don't have those true playmakers at the tight end position. Oh, man, I don't even know who.
Well, remember, Pitta got hurt.
Right, he's done. His career probably is done.
Yep.
And then they had another tight end that went down.
Well, they lost Kyle Juszczyk. Remember, he went to San Francisco. That was a guy the Bills allegedly targeted in free agency, but he went there on a huge deal. So the Bills then went after Patrick DeMarco and got a little bit more cheap. But, you know, this is a team, too. They had a bit of a rotation at running back last year. Terrence West was in there. Kenneth Dixon was in there. Justin Forsett. But the other thing is, I don't know, they never got really yet. They haven't really gotten out of Breshad Perriman what they expected, the wide receiver.
No, they haven't.
And that's been a big issue with them.
They haven't. And I remember – and they keep giving them chances. And
right.
I remember talking to Kamar Aiken when he was down there. And when Steve Smith went down, he became their number one. And he went for like 70-something, 80 catches, almost 1,000 yards. And it was like the next year – Perryman was coming back, and they were putting him right back ahead of Kamar. And Kamar was like, yo, like, I'm producing for y'all. Y'all going to give this guy another chance? And that's why he was just like, I want out of here. I don't even want to be here anymore. They keep giving him chances, and he's not being able to produce. So we'll see. I'm sure they're going to give him another chance this year. This probably is his last year, though, if he's not able to produce for them.
They went with a cornerback with their first overall pick, Marlon Humphrey, out of Alabama. And
he was the one I wanted the Bills to take.
Yeah, he was considered by many to be the top corner in the draft, by many. You know, we'll see where he ultimately winds up. He was taken by the Ravens with the 16th overall selection.
And their defense just hasn't been the same without Ray Lewis and Ed Reed and those guys. I mean, for the last couple of years, they're just not the same team that we knew Baltimore to be for a good period of a decade when they had those guys, Ed Reed and Ray Lewis and those guys, all on the team. So, you know, I don't really see them challenging for a playoff spot in that division. I don't see them beating the Steelers. And I don't see them beating Cincinnati either.
Well, here's the question for you. And by the way, I should say he was considered pretty much the second best corner. Marshawn Lattimore was considered mainly the top corner in the draft. But is Baltimore in a position where maybe they should start to rethink about maybe kind of rebuilding this thing?
I think so.
Or do you think they still – what is their window of opportunity, I guess I'm asking?
I think their window is closed.
I feel like it has.
I think their window
has closed.
I feel
like it has.
I think they need to really start to rebuild this thing and bring some young, talented guys on and just build through the draft. I think their window has closed. Their defense is not the same. Their offense, they don't have playmakers like that.
Right.
I think they need to rebuild the whole thing.
So do you have to go on and move on from Joe Flacco if you do that? He's making a big number, his
salary. I think they need to draft
one. He's going to be 32 this year.
They need to draft one here soon and start to groom that guy. You know, like I guess what the Patriots are doing, they drafted Garoppolo. They feel like he's their guy moving forward. I think they need to find a guy behind Joe Flacco and let him – be the next guy in waiting.
And remember what the Patriots have done. It wasn't just Garoppolo. Before that, you know, whatever, this Ryan Mallett or whoever, they drafted guys just in case.
Exactly.
We haven't seen Baltimore do that, but you're right. And they didn't this year either.
Right. So they need to get on that.
I agree with you. I think the window for the Ravens is closing, not opening. But I will never count out Ozzie Smith as a GM. That's the thing about it.
Yeah, I don't think you can count him out.
Or John Harbaugh as a coach. I like him a lot.
Right. I don't think you can count neither one of those guys out. I just don't think they have enough talent on offense and defense to get it done week
in,
week
out. All
right,
we're going to talk about the Cincinnati Bengals and the Cleveland Browns in the North, but also shift over to the AFC West and the East, the teams that have not made the playoffs or did not last year. But before we do that, we're going to bring on Warren Sharp from Sharp Football. He is really, really smart. He's got a lot of great analysis out there, and you can go and download his publication where he really goes through tons and tons of stuff, analytics side of things, scheduling. We're going to talk with him. He's an engineer. He's way smarter than us, and we'll get his thoughts when we come back on the John Murphy Show.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network Sports Update.
Back here on the John Murphy Show, Sal Capaccio with Donald Jones, taking a look at your sports headlines. Sam Darnold, the quarterback from USC, who some people for some reason call him Darno. I don't know why. I keep hearing people say that.
I don't know.
And I guess some of the announcers called him that last year, but it's Darnold, right? I mean, it's Arnold with a D.
Right.
He says teams should not tank for him, Donald Jones.
They shouldn't.
Teams should not tank for him. That's what he said. That was his own quote. And that's crazy. When people are getting asked about it, you know people are doing it. Aaron Rodgers had a quote. He said he's on the back nine of his career. That makes sense. I mean, he's been around a while.
He has.
You know, he took a while to start, but he's been around a while. Aaron Rodgers said that. Robinson Cano. I always loved the commercial where they said, Robinson Cano? Robinson Canyes. Robinson Cano, 10th inning home run, gives the American League a 2-1 victory in the All-Star game last night. And the number one seed, Andy Murray, was ousted by Sam Querrey at Wimbledon. So Murray is out. Djokovic was out.
Now, in baseball, the team that wins the All-Star game, they end up getting, like, home field advantage in the...
Not anymore.
Not anymore. Okay. That was hard. I don't even know how they did that. That was stupid.
I agree with you. It was dumb. But the side effect is, at least it did actually get people talking about the game and
true.
For the league.
Give them something
people
to play
watching
for.
But I agree. It was the worst, stupidest, dumbest rule ever that we could ever imagine. So, all right, Sal Capaccio here with Donald Jones, John Murphy Show, WGR and MSG on the TV side of things. We're going to welcome in right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh, Warren Sharp. And this guy is really living up to his name. This is probably a stage name. I'm going to have to ask him because he is so smart. Warren Sharp, he always puts together a really, really cool preview preview every year, and you can go and take a look and buy that preview, download it. He'll tell you how to do that. It's Warren Sharp's 2017 football preview. He joins us on the line right now with Donald Jones and Sal Capaccio. It's Warren Sharp. Hi, Warren. Good to talk with you again. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to talk to you guys about the Bills and the NFL.
First of all, I want to get it is really your name, Warren Sharp, right? Because you are so smart. We know you're an engineer. That's not a stage name, is it?
Well, a portion of that name is, I do my full-time job. I basically don't sleep. And so my full-time job during the day is as a professional engineer. I work on and testify for construction cases that go over budget or finish late. And there's a dispute between the owner and the contractor. We get involved as experts, and we write expert reports and testify. So that's what I do full-time. And so obviously try not to muddy the waters a little bit. The NFL stuff that I do basically until 3 a.m. every single night is, and that's how I came up with the time to write this book. And that's really my passion, though. That's really my love, as hopefully it shows in the book.
Now, Warren, you know, some people, when they have like multiple jobs or they have a business on the side, usually it's kind of like in the same playing field as, you know, their number one job. But what you do is like totally different. This, what you do for football is totally different than what you are doing on the construction side.
It is, but it, you know, I have a background. I went to school for civil engineering. I got my professional license after working in the industry for 4 years, which you have to do the training. And engineering is about problem solving. It's about trying to figure out solutions to problems. And I approach the NFL in much the same way. It's a problem with figuring out how to most efficiently win games. And if you take it just at its core principle of trying to efficiently win games, what's the quickest path to victory on a weekly basis for teams? It really allows you to better understand the things that teams are doing right and the things that teams aren't doing right that they're lacking. And I think I try to focus on that a lot throughout my entire analysis. Now, in terms of the difference in jobs overall, absolutely. But I had an affinity towards developing math models to try to predict game outcomes back when I was in college. And I kind of built upon that over the years once I got out of college. I've been now working professionally for 20 years and developed, you know, this book. I have a free stats website, sharpfootballstats.com, where people can research tons of information with visualizations, and all of it's 100% free. And I just like statistics. I love analytics, and I like trying to figure out and approach the NFL from a very different perspective than a lot of the analysis is currently done. I think it really shows edges when you approach things differently than other people are doing.
All right, so that begs the question. I mean, we all are familiar with what happened with the MIT students going to Vegas and blackjack and things like that. Do you use this to your advantage? I mean, can you make a living off this, doing this and being, you know, ahead of the curve, I guess, lines and what you do for a living as far as these numbers are concerned in your record?
Absolutely. To be honest, I've surpassed what I do from an engineering perspective in terms of income a couple of years ago based on everything that I'm doing with the sports betting and the analytics and what I can use that information for. I, you know, have partners out in Las Vegas. I was approached by guys several years ago, work with them, professional betting groups, wow. The line makers who are out in Las Vegas at several different spots use my information as well. When I'm on games, they adjust their lines quicker when they see that I'm releasing games. So I interact with those guys some. I interact with my professional betting groups out in Las Vegas. And, of course, I have clients as well that I advise. So I take a totally different tact, as it probably shows in the book. You know, it's, for me, it's all about the analytics and the data driving my conclusions. It's not about, you know, just saying, oh, I've got the lock and this sort of thing. It's completely the opposite of that. It's about working hard to try to produce solid results and a love for the game, a respect for the sport, an understanding of the sport. And, you know, really, I wrote a lot of these pages in this book trying to teach teams, you know, if teams get a hold of this book, trying to teach them what they should try to implement to do a little bit differently that could help them out a long way by doing some minor little things. And so it's about trying to teach people things.
Warren Sharp joining us here on the John Murphy Show, the owner and creator of sharpfootballanalysis.com and sharpfootballstats.com.
Warren, just remind me to you know, I'm going to get your number once we once we get off the line here. I can play some bets this year.
But you know what, Warren, your tips will be in the book, essentially, right? I mean, the book is a lot about that. It's about your win-loss probability, what to expect from teams this year. You kind of do take that approach in all different angles, right?
It's interwoven in throughout the book, but one of the things that my specialty is, if we're talking strictly from the sports betting perspective, is the game totals, you know, the over and unders on games, you know, 47 points, will the game be more or less than that between both teams combined? That's kind of one of my specialties. I hit at a very strong rate there, and we move numbers. We move the lines when the games come out, but the information that's in the book, there is some sports betting involved. But there's also a lot of fantasy, whether it's daily or season-long. But I try to approach everything, every podcast or show that I'm on, and everything I do for my clients, from a general perspective of understanding football and what it takes to win these games. What are the matchups in this particular week that are going to make the difference? Who holds the cards in those matchups? Who's got the edges? And that then is conducive to talking about sports betting or daily fantasy or season-long fantasy. There's just a lot of different things you can take from it if you approach it from the macro level of just understanding this particular matchup on this particular week.
So you must be watching, I mean, every day, injuries and everything, because I can only imagine, you know, you might have a certain line on a game, and then Friday, let's just say Sammy Watkins or Shady McCoy comes up with an injury and they're not going to play in that game. Well, that line must change.
Oh, it absolutely does. Sometimes there is a tendency to overcompensate for certain players' injuries, and then there's a tendency to undercompensate for other players' injuries. For instance, when a starting center goes down, a lot of people just bat their eyes and don't think twice about it. But the communication, everything the starting center does, is vital. He's a very underrated position in the NFL. So absolutely, I mean, fortunately for my engineering job, much of it I'm capable of doing from my home office, where I've got a bank of like literally six computer screens in front of me at this station. And so I've got some of them on my engineering, but I've always got an eye to the injuries and the lines and everything else. It really is from like 7:30 a.m. until 2, 3 a.m. at night. This is my life. I study football. I live and breathe it.
Well, we already got a tweet that says someone's buying your book ASAP, so we'll let you tell us all about how they can do that in just a little while. But let's dig into this thing a little bit. You talked about the macro. What about the micro? What exactly do you do in the book? What are the sections? How do they break down? What can we find in this thing?
Yeah, so what I do is, from a very specific perspective, I give six pages for every single team. This is a 236-page full-color book. You can buy it in hard copy or in PDF copy. And every single team chapter is organized in the same manner. It covers basically one of the things that I love, one of my favorite pages in each team chapter, is an analysis of the play calling that the team did last season. What were their tendencies? When were they most likely to call certain types of plays? Which players had the most snap rate? And I dig really deep into personnel groupings as well. How often were they in a certain personnel grouping? How does that compare to the NFL average? And then what was their success rates when they were in those groupings? But there's so much to really try to say in terms of what the team chapters do. I cover a lot of strength of schedule analysis. How does their schedule this year compared to what they faced last year? But at the core, it's trying to understand what these teams were last season, not just their final win-loss record, because that's misleading. I know there's the old Parcellsism, you are what your record says you are, but that just matters whether or not you're going to make the playoffs that particular year. Everybody who's played the game, any game whatsoever, knows you have some close wins, you have some close losses, you have some turnover luck. You are not necessarily what your record is. And so judging teams based on just what they did last year from a win-loss perspective is erroneous in my mind. The way that you have to look at it is breaking down the analytics to core levels, core elements, efficiencies, understanding the injuries that the team may have had last year, understanding how many close wins versus large wins they had, and then trying to forecast who they added this offseason, whether it's free agency, whether it's through the draft, compensatory selections, what have you, trades, and then what coaching staff brought, they included, whether or not they added a new coordinator or a whole new staff in general, because people underestimate the influence of coaching in the NFL. the players are marketed so much that people kind of take coaching for granted, except with the exception of New England, pretty much. Everybody else thinks that, well, you got to coach whatever, but it's all about Tyrod Taylor. Well, it's about what the coach wants Tyrod Taylor to do and the plays that they're using Tyrod Taylor in. So there's a lot there. Those are the team chapters. Then I have about 50 pages of articles at the beginning where I talk about efficiency, strength of schedule, issues with the NFL, a lot of different things. And then, there, of course, there's actually embedded audio. If you have a phone, you download a QR reader, you'll be able to scan these QR codes. I'm going to give updates on every single team. I think it's July 24th, right before most teams go into training camp, and then August 29th, right as that key third preseason game is done, I'm going to give another breakdown on all the teams, so you'll be able to scan these codes, and you'll be able to hear me giving you up-to-date information, even though the book has already been out for almost 2 months.
Now, Warren, every year there are usually two, maybe three teams that end up in the playoffs that no one really expected to be in the playoffs. So how often do you predict that type of stuff?
I do look at forecasted win totals. It's one of the things that I do every single season. There's a team. I don't know if you want to dive into any of these right now or you want to save it for later. But there definitely is.
We can talk about the Bills for sure.
Definitely going to dive in.
6.5 wins you have them at.
Well, the 6.5 wins is what is currently being projected by the Vegas odds makers in terms of their forecast for this team this year. Now, the one thing that's interesting, sometimes this lines up and sometimes it does not line up with their weekly forecasted point spread, because they also put out lines. CG Technology, which is one of the books, they actually own a bunch of different books out in Las Vegas, but they're one of the bigger groups there in charge of several sports books. They put out lines for every single game except for week 17, so weeks 1 through 16 for every team. And the Bills actually, bring the bad news into the show, the bad vibes, but the Bills are actually only favored by more than 3 points in terms of, that's generally considered the home field advantage. If you're playing at home, you're generally going to get 3 points. But they're only favored by 3 or more points once all season long. They host a number of teams in Buffalo where they are very small favorites. For instance, against Denver, -1, against Tampa Bay, -1.5, against the Saints, -2. What this means, essentially, the odds maker is telling us that they think if this game was played on a neutral field, all of those teams are better than Buffalo. Denver is better. Tampa Bay is better. New Orleans is better. However, the fact that they're playing in Buffalo, Buffalo is going to be a small favorite, but it's not even a 3-point line. So they have a very difficult schedule. Overall, this is a team, I measure strength of schedule a totally different way than what most other outlets do, where they look at strength of schedule based upon 2016 win-loss record, win-loss rate. I look at it based on what the odds makers are projecting these teams are going to do this year, and I compile all the opponents based on the wins they're forecasted to get this year. And from that Vegas win total, they have the third hardest schedule in the NFL. They play 6 games against top 10 opponents. After week one, obviously they play the Jets week one. I think they're favored by like 6.5 points in that game right now. After that week one game, they will play the most difficult schedule in the NFL from week two onward to the end of the season. So it's going to be a difficult schedule. Obviously, with the new coaching staff, I think they're going to be better equipped than the prior coaching staff, in my opinion, to deal with it. But it's still going to be an uphill battle this season for you guys.
Do you see anything in the Bills specifically, any trends last year? Like, say, LeSean McCoy, we just talked about him more, and he's 29 years old today at the top of his game. Like, do you break down the individuals? What have you seen as far as maybe certain guys' games, where they may be? Is it just team-oriented? Do you break down, do you get into specific players and what to expect from them as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can tell you, I don't know how often you even hear this in Buffalo, but for LeSean McCoy to receive not a single vote for the All-Pro last season was an absolute joke, in my opinion. The book covers players. The book covers tons of players. Every single key player on every single team gives you stats, gives you my spin in a narrative format analysis of those players. But in this chapter on the Bills, I mean, obviously, I think I've talked about this elsewhere or maybe even on the show when I was on with you guys the last time about what LeSean McCoy did against this schedule. The number one most difficult schedule of run defenses to face, they ran the ball at such a ridiculously predictable rate, particularly on early downs. And for LeSean McCoy to produce that season that he produced, look, in the 7 years since the NFL became a more pass-heavy league, since 2010 when they changed the hit rules, you can't hit the quarterback slate, you can't hit the receivers, causing all these concussions over the middle of the field, there have only been five running backs to run for at least 175 rushing attempts, average at least 5 yards per carry, and score 10 rushing touchdowns. Only five of them, including LeSean McCoy last year. The other four guys all received either MVP, they were the NFL's MVP, or they were first-team All-Pros.
Wow.
LeSean McCoy didn't get one single vote for first-team All-Pro last season. I think it was a complete joke. He was the heart and soul of that team last year. They actually face a much easier schedule of run defenses this year. They face the 18th overall most difficult schedule of run defenses. I know they lost Gillislee, but that offensive line really helped carry the load. I think they're underrated as well in Buffalo in terms of the way that they were able to run block. And having a quarterback like Tyrod who is capable of being a dual threat option helps the run game inherently due to the matchups that he creates. And I think the Buffalo Bills' run game is still in a great position to do even better things this season than even they did last year. And LeSean McCoy had a ridiculous season last year.
So when you say that they're facing such a tough schedule, but then you know you tell us that the run defenses are going to be not nearly as good, where does that tough part come from? Is it the quarterbacks specifically and the passing offenses that they'll be facing? Because that's what we talk about a lot here in Buffalo this time of year, looking at the schedule. They're going to face the NFC South, and you got Winston and the Bucs, and you got Breeze and the Saints, and you got Matt Ryan and Cam Newton, the list goes on. Then, of course, Brady twice, what Tannehill did last year. Derek Carr comes to Buffalo this year. Mm-hmm. Is that where the tough part of the schedule really is the meat for the Bills analytically?
You hit the nail right on the head. The biggest jump for them, they face the most difficult jump of opposing offenses. So their defense is going to be tested a ton. Last year, they actually played the fourth easiest schedule of overall offenses as well as passing offenses. And that makes sense when you think about who they played. They played the NFC West, which basically even Seattle, they won 10 games, but it was still a down year for them. Arizona had a down year, and of course, we know the other couple of teams, San Francisco and L.A. in that division were terrible. And then they played the AFC North, which outside of Pittsburgh, I mean, Cincinnati was beat up at the wide receiver position. They had a down year. Baltimore's offense was terrible last year, and of course, Cleveland is like perma-bad offensively. Hopefully, they'll get better in the near future, but they have been bad. So they played a very easy schedule. You mentioned who they get this upcoming season in terms of those opposing quarterbacks and the offenses. They play the sixth most difficult schedule of opposing offenses this year, including the third most difficult schedule of opposing passing offenses. And even some of the teams that they face in these non-divisional games, like, you know, out in the AFC West, where I'm a little bit down on the Chiefs offense, I'm a little bit down on the Broncos offense, but overall, those teams are very difficult teams to defeat thanks to their balance. It's not like going up against the Browns or the Rams or the 49ers. So even some of the teams that they play that don't have great, awesome offenses are solid teams for the most part.
Now, you brought up Kansas City out there in the AFC West, and that's a team that everyone kind of scratches their head about, and you don't know what they're going to be this year. Obviously, you know, they're always right around the playoffs. Last year, they won that division out there. With Derek Carr coming back, I would think Oakland is going to challenge them. What do you see out of Kansas City this year?
Yeah, they're a hot-button team for me because I have studied the way that this team has won games since Andy Reid came to town, and he's done things extremely smart and effectively in the way that they win games, and it's because of the limitations that he knows the offense, particularly Alex Smith, has. The way that they're winning games is via the turnover battle. Alex Smith is not forcing the ball down the field. They're playing very conservatively offensively. Bob Sutton challenges this defense to record sacks and quarterback pressures, get takeaways, and turn those into return touchdowns. And so what has that produced? They have won the turnover battle in 36 games over Andy Reid's 4 years in Kansas City. That has led them to 30 wins in those 36 games. When you win the turnover battle, you win 79% of your games, and he's won 30 out of 36. the return touchdown game, whether it's on special teams getting a special teams return or returning an interception or fumble for a quick 7 points. They have done that. They have beat their opponent in the return touchdown battle in a particular game 24 games. The NFL average over the last 4 years is 10 games.
Wow.
They are so far and away better at returning touchdowns than anybody else. They have won 22 of the 24 games where they record a return touchdown, at least one more return touchdown than does their opponent. So they're not winning games. If you look at their metrics, you go to the Kansas City Chiefs chapter in this book. First of all, I explain all this stuff in more detail in the book. But if you go to the Kansas City Chiefs chapter and you look at their metrics, these are not the metrics of a team that won 12 games last year. This is a team that is a very mediocre average team that does great in getting takeaways, great into turning those into touchdowns without their offense even stepping out onto the field. This season, they face a very difficult schedule, second most overall difficult when you use the Vegas win totals to help figure out your strength of schedule. They face the third most difficult schedule in their rushing attack from last year to this year, which means they have a big step up in competition of opposing run defenses. That means more maybe thrust onto Alex Smith's shoulders offensively to make things happen. And now he doesn't have Jeremy Maclin. It's not going to open up the offense nearly as much without him there. I love the possibility of Tyreek Hill doing some things, but he's not a reliable threat from the perspective of a high-efficiency player. He's a boomer-bust type player. It'll be interesting to see how Reed works him into the offense this year. But I think overall, this could be a year where the Kansas City Chiefs maybe don't get all those great things bouncing their way from a turnover and a return touchdown perspective, and then we really see Andy Reid and Alex Smith's limitations with this offense.
Well, that's good news for Bills fans because obviously we're watching them closely here, Warren. The Bills have their first-round pick next year. The ideal situation for Bills fans is the Bills fans Bills challenge for the playoffs for the first time in 18 years. They get in maybe, hopefully, and then obviously Kansas City isn't very good and they can have a pick near the top of the draft. So at least you're telling us there's a chance for a nice pick coming away our way here in Buffalo via Kansas City, right?
Well, Kansas City is still a good team. So yep. I don't predict like a 3-4 win type season for them. But if you talk about what this team has done in the past where they won 12 games and 11 games and 9 games and 11 games, if you go back, you know, the last 4 years, I see this team as more of a team near around 500. And I actually, in the AFC West, I think there's a number of teams that are slightly overrated. I actually think this could be a really sneaky year for the San Diego Chargers to emerge from that division and play a really solid role. As long as they get a little bit of help from the run game and Melvin Gordon, I think their defense is sneaky, improved, and a strong unit, whereas they've had terrible defenses in the years past. And that offense is absolutely loaded, particularly at the tight end and wide receiver position. So I have high expectations for them. I think Oakland is going to be good. I'm maybe not as high on Derek Carr as some people, but they do still have a very good team around him. And you know, I think the Denver Broncos, their offense is just a mess right now. I don't really know. Rick Dennison is going to be much happier in Buffalo than he was in Denver because they actually have a run game in Buffalo. In Denver, they had such a terrible run game. They ranked 29th in rushing success rate last year. That was against the sixth easiest schedule of run defenses. So they played easy run defenses and were still miserable at running the football, gave them no balance. So I think Dennison's going to have a much better year in Buffalo this season.
The book is amazing. It's loaded. I got it up on my computer right now. I've been looking. I was just showing Donald some of the things here. It's really incredible. Tell everybody how they can get the book.
Well, if you want the hard copy, it's 236 pages, full color. You can go up to Amazon, and you can get that on Amazon. And actually, I think today is the last day Amazon's giving you a $5 off coupon. So you can get it, I think, for like $17 and some change. And that's a really good deal up at Amazon. If you want the PDF copy to put on your iPad or anything like that, you can get that at my analysis website. It's sharpfootballanalysis.com. You can go there and get the PDF copy. So depends what type of copy you want to get, whether you want the physical copy you can hold and take with you on vacation and read on the plane easily, or if you want the copy you can throw onto your iPad and have on your computer either way, different location, but they're both the same exact product.
And of course, on Twitter, you can follow him. Great follow. He's got a lot of really cool content there, at Sharp Football. That is no E there, just at Sharp Football on Twitter. It is the owner and creator of sharpfootballanalysis.com and sharpfootball.com, sharpfootballstats.com, excuse me. That is Warren Sharp. Warren, thank you very much. This was really entertaining. Hope we can catch up down the road again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right. Thank you very much. That was really cool, huh? I mean, he really breaks it down.
I mean, he breaks it all the way down.
My gosh, right?
Man, it's hard even to follow sometimes.
Right. The stuff that's available to us out there.
Yeah.
That we can do
crazy.
With this stuff.
It's crazy
out.
How accurate they are.
I know.
With these predictions.
That's why we always say Vegas builds casinos for a reason. Yeah. They look the way they do for a reason. They ain't losing. Right?
They not at all.
We'll come back. We'll talk more non-playoff teams in the AFC last year. We'll stay on the North. We got Cincinnati and Cleveland, what to expect from them this year, and some more fun with Donald with the ESPY Awards.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Good stuff from Warren Sharp. Sharp Football. I mean, he's got a lot of stuff there. And he is sharp. He does live up to the name. I thought so, Donald. I'm like, boy, that kind of name, you know, you're supposed to be smart. It's got to be a stage name. But he said I think it's part of his name, he said.
It's part of his name, yeah. But it works for him because the dude is smart.
So what would his name be, like Sharpowiak or something? Like
Sharpowski?
Sharpowski. Sharpen. I don't know. Sharpen would
could
still
be Sharpen.
Could be Sharpen, something like that. Donald, the ESPYs are tonight. Here is a category.
Let's do it.
What category is this? Best blank. Jason Belmonte, Francois Lavoie, and EJ Tackett. Best blank. Best what? What sport do those three people participate
in? Say the name
Jason
again.
Belmonte, Francois Lavoie, and EJ Tackett.
It sounds like tennis.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's not. I'll give you a hint. It's a sport that we participate a lot here in Buffalo. People like to do
hockey?
This. No, it's an individual sport, but people go and this is a recreational type sport. In Buffalo, people like to go to do this. And I think a couple years ago, you guys.
Is it more like we did it?
The Bills used to have like their own little tournaments.
So it's like racquetball?
It's bowling.
Oh, bowling.
Yeah, those are bowlers. Really? But come on, Francois Lavoie.
Yeah,
wow.
We did used to go bowl.
I know,
all
you
the
guys
time.
Used to do that a lot,
yeah,
right?
Every Friday night.
There you go. See? See? There we go. All right, 803-0550, 888-550.
It's like fencing or something like that. I don't know what the music
that,
is.
That's the Jeopardy music. Jeopardy that's the Jeopardy music. Theme. That's for you.
I would win
all these
no
questions.
Money.
All right, here we go. Keep the Jeopardy theme. We'll do one more. Best blank. You ready? Best blank. Javier Castellano, Mike E. Smith, and John Velasquez. Best blank.
They all play in one sport.
They all participate in a sport. And I wouldn't even necessarily call them athletes. They all participate in a sport. Javier Castellano, Mike E. Smith, and John Velasquez. And I'll give you one hint. There's another part of the sport I would consider that part, the athlete. These are not the athletes.
Is this an Olympic sport?
Nope. They sit on something.
Rowing?
Close. They're jockeys.
Oh, okay,
best
okay,
jockey.
Okay. Gotcha.
Javier Castellano, Mike E. Smith, and John Velasquez.
They do all of these sports in the ESPYs?
They don't. Televise all of these awards.
Oh, I'm
they
about tell, to say.
They, but yes, there are awards for all of these at the ESPY.
Okay, right.
At the ESPYs. Tonight's the ESPYs. We'll have some more fun with this. We'll get to the real stuff a little bit later. But in the meantime, let's look back at the AFC North, Donald, and the teams that did not make the playoffs last year. We touched on Baltimore. We said we both agree that their window is closing, not opening, right?
Mm-hmm.
What about the Cincinnati Bengals? It appears as though, and I think this was predicted for a couple of years, that their window would start to close. And
right.
It seemed like it did last year after they went to the playoffs and had that horrific ending against the Steelers a couple of years ago. Last year, 6-9-1. They did not take a step forward. We saw them. The Bills went there and played them. It just seems like they were a bit of a shell of what they had been the last few years.
The one guy who on that team I don't think has taken a step forward is Andy Dalton, mm-hmm. their quarterback. You know, he has not been able to, even the years they were in the playoffs, he hasn't been able to win a game in the playoffs, you know. So he hasn't taken a step forward. He's been the same person as when he first came in this league, and I think he needs to take a step forward if they want to win. Now, they lost some key pieces. They lost Marvin Jones to Detroit. They lost Mohamed Sanu. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't good. They needed that help. Now, they ended up drafting – I feel like they drafted one this year to go alongside.
They played John Ross. Remember
yes,
the wide,
yes,
the,
they
the
did draft
guy.
Him in the first round, mm-hmm. and we'll see how he ends up. We know he was injury prone coming. That is a guy who was injury prone coming out of college, but lightning fast. So if he can be on the other side, taking the top off of the defense and threatening defenses,
you know who else they drafted?
They drafted Joe Mixon. Yes, and that's going to be something that people watch
right.
moving forward. I mean, they obviously they have some weapons on offense. Their defense was older last year.
Agreed.
And I think they need to get younger on their defense. I don't really see them challenging the Steelers, though. I just don't see them challenging. I don't see any other team in that division challenging the Steelers. The Steelers are a young team, even though their quarterback is up there. They are a young, talented team.
I agree with you. And you look at Andy Dalton, you talked about him. He only threw 18 touchdowns last year.
Yeah.
That's not good. 4,200 yards, that's a lot of yards, right?
You know,
18 touchdowns.
He really, really relies on A.J. Green.
Mm-hmm.
And A.J. Green, when he went down in that Bills game,
yep.
It was like no, he has nobody to throw to after that. He likes to throw the ball up to A.J. Green. It's the same way with Ryan Fitzpatrick when he was down in New York. He relied on throwing the ball up to Brandon Marshall and Eric
right.
Decker. He wasn't able to do that last year, so you saw Fitz throw a lot of interceptions. I mean, we know Fitz to throw interceptions anyway. But Andy Dalton relies on A.J. Green, and when he doesn't have that guy – it's like, oh, man, I don't know what to do now. I have to actually sit in the pocket and make all of the throws and not just be able to throw the ball down the field to A.J. Green.
They lost Rex Burkhead. That was a big loss for them.
Yeah. You
know, he was a bit of a guy that could kind of do a bit of everything. I mean, mm-hmm. he had 17 catches last year, but I think the Patriots are going to use him out of the backfield this year.
Oh, yeah. I think the Patriots, I mean, I don't even want to talk about them.
All right. We won't talk about the Patriots. We talked enough about
anyway,
them.
So.
But you're right. I mean, they've had weapons. They've had playmakers, throughout the Marvin Lewis
yes.
tenure. They've had a lot of character questions and issues
right.
that I think have really come back to bite them. What happened 2 years ago in the playoffs with, the penalties that they had that really cost them down the stretch?
Yeah,
Vontaze Burfict, you know, and what happened
and
there?
Pac-Man Jones.
That's right.
Yeah, those guys both had penalties, and it ended up causing them that game against the Steelers.
So do you think – and the Bills, by the way, do play Cincinnati again this year, early in the
they
season.
They play them every year.
That's right. It does seem like that. That's a game I think that's a swing game. It's a big game for the Bills. It's a big game for the Bengals. That is a game.
Last year was a swing game for the
yeah.
Bills.
Yeah. And it helped. Unfortunately, the Bills didn't take advantage
right.
overall. But that's the kind of game that you need to win if you're either Cincinnati or Buffalo because you're fighting for playoffs with those teams in the wild card race.
Right, exactly. I mean, you're – it's hard to dethrone those teams at the top for the Cincinnati Bengals. It's hard to take away the Steelers right now. The Steelers are a very good team. And here in Buffalo, the Patriots have been on top of not only this division, but
right.
the entire NFL for the last, 15, 17 years, however long Tom Brady's been their quarterback, So it's tough. You are fighting for a wild card spot. And so, yeah, you do need to make sure that you beat those teams that might be fighting for the same type of spot.
Bills have Cincinnati in Cincinnati. Week 5 of the season is right before their bye week. The mm-hmm. team that has been pulling up the rear of the AFC North, and I think many expect them to this year, although I think they're expected to be better, but better from 1-15 can still not be very
right.
good, and that is the Cleveland Browns. How much of a jump at all do you expect them to make? And let me ask you, do you expect them to get good enough to contend for a playoff spot?
No. I don't see them getting good enough to contend for a wild card spot
right.
at all. I just don't – I don't know who their quarterback is going to be. I don't know if they know who their quarterback is going to be. I think, they drafted DeShone Kizer in the second round. I think he's going to challenge. They still have, obviously, Brock Osweiler, and I think they need to let one of those guys – I mean, if you draft a guy in the second round, you might as well just let him take his bumps and bruises in there and grow with that team. They did get some talent, some talented guys in Jabril Peppers for the defense. And then they drafted the tight end out of Miami in
right.
the first round.
And Njoku.
Right.
And they had and Myles Garrett, the number one pick.
Right, and Myles Garrett. So they definitely brought in some young talent.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to take them some years to really get a good team that's good enough to at least make it to the playoffs.
Yeah, and this goes back to yesterday what we talked about with Steve Tasker. Look, I understand why teams do it. There's a mechanism in place. And my problem with and I've said this before on the radio – with the whole tanking issue is that leagues give incentive to teams to lose sometimes. You
right.
give an incentive to say, hey, if you're the worst team, you get the best pick, right?
Mm-hmm.
The problem, I think, what the Browns did, and I understand why they did it, I think the problem what they did, they went too far. They stripped it down so much, Donald, that I don't know, even the guys they brought in over the last 2-3 years, by the time they get to a point where they
right.
might want to contend,
they're going to be ready to move on.
They're going to move on. You can't pay everybody at some point.
Right.
they're going to have 3-4 years in, injuries start to happen. So that's very hard to do, and I think that's what we're seeing with them right now. Even look at a guy. They don't get Josh Gordon back yet. We still don't know his situation. He's still not playing for this team.
I think he's done.
Right? I mean, yeah, we'll see. Who are they going to wind up throwing to? The best situation for the Bills perspective, though, here's what you need to root for if you're a Buffalo Bills fan. Root for DeShone Kizer to be pretty good, because if that happens, the Browns aren't taking a quarterback next year with their first-round pick. And if the Bills decide that they want to move on from Tyrod, I'm not saying that's the case. They may say Tyrod's great. We're keeping him for many years. I don't know. But if, let's say, they were to decide to move on and they wanted to draft one of these young quarterbacks in a really good class,
right. You
want as few other teams as possible drafting quarterbacks. So if you DeShone Kizer's good, the Browns have an incentive to stay with him and not take another young guy next year.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a great way to put it. I think there are a lot of teams out there. I mean, how many teams can you really say have a franchise quarterback right now in the NFL? Probably 10 to 15 teams, right?
Right.
If that many. And then how many of those teams have older quarterbacks that they might be looking like, okay, we need to, like a Steelers or like Baltimore, we need to find who our next quarterback is going to be and draft that guy, you know? So there are so many teams that are going to be trying to get, especially if it's as good of a class as everybody's predicting it to be.
Right.
There are going to be a lot of teams that are trying to get in position to get those quarterbacks next year. So we'll see how that plays itself out. But in terms of the Browns, like you said, they have stripped it all the way down. And it's going to take them a long time to build that thing back up. I don't know how long that's going to take, but it's going to take a long time. Because like you said, those guys, if you're a first-round pick and you're in a certain city for – you know, 4 or 5 years, if you're a player on a team and you're in a certain city for 4 or 5 years, and let's just say you're having great seasons every year, you've given this city everything that you have. You want to win, you know, you want to get paid, but you want to win at the same time. So you can go to another team that's a winning team that will pay you to come there. And by the time these young draft picks get onto their fourth and fifth year, and it's time that where they're, you know, where they're free agents, they're going to say, okay, this team is not going to win for a long time. I think I want to move on and go somewhere else.
I'm going to ask you a trivia question, see if you can get this. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
How many years in a row have the Browns finished fourth out of four in the AFC North? How many years do you think they've been the worst team in their own division?
In a row?
Yep.
Since they made the playoffs back in – they made the playoffs. Man, I wish Tom was in
here. Well, that was the second question I was going to ask you, playoffs. But it hasn't been that long. But it has been quite a while. 6 years in a row.
Six years in a row,
they finished fourth out of four. There goes them. I'm challenging you today.
Yeah.
Also, the last time they made the playoffs, 2002. Right?
And that
was the Kelly Holcomb 400-yard game. They wound up losing to Pittsburgh, right? But here's the thing. This is what I'm looking over the Browns. We talk a lot here in Buffalo. Fans talk a lot, and we recognize there's a drought. There's a long playoff, non-playoff history going on here right now. 17 years. The Browns have the second longest in the league in 2002. But since they've been in the playoffs, here's where they finished in their own division out of four teams. Fourth, 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 second, fourth, fourth, third, fourth, 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 fourth. Wow.
Right.
How many wins? 5-4, 6-4, 10, 4-5-5, 4-5-4, 7-3-1. We talk about the Bills being in a 7-win to 9-win, you know, purgatory, people say, right in that middle ground. They're just good enough to kind of fight there at the end, not good enough to quite make it. The Browns never have more than 4 or 5 wins.
Right.
This is a team that's really – they've been bad for a long time. I mean, I know that what they did for the last 2 years and how they tanked and went down to the bottom essentially, but they've been kind of doing that without trying
over
the last several years.
Right, exactly. And it's hard in their division. I mean, they've had Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, and Baltimore as good teams, you know? So it's like, man, they have no chance in that division.
I would expect 7 years in a row. I think they're going to finish fourth again.
I think so as well.
So they're looking at 7 years in a row like that. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We have more non-AFC playoff teams from last year that we'll get to. I'll challenge Donald a little bit more on the ESPYs tonight.
I think I got one right.
And then we'll get to some of the big-time awards and see who he picks to win in some of these major categories. We're having some fun here on the John Murphy Show. Stick around.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
What a world we live in.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Social media has really changed the dynamic, hasn't it? It really has.
It's crazy.
I mean, you can always get in touch with us via Twitter, at DAJones19 is Donald's, at Sal Sports is mine, at John Murphy Show, at WGR550, at Buffalo Bills. We just, anybody you want to get in contact with, it's instantaneous.
It is.
And you can almost say anything you want, and people believe it, right?
It's amazing. The players, I mean, you should see the players' mentions after games.
I have, oof, and it's horrible. And I give you guys credit. I give all these guys credit for – that's why Kyle Williams says he's not on Twitter, by the way.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with that. You know, I don't really have – I don't have Facebook. I have Instagram, but I don't use it at all. Twitter I have just for work purposes, but I don't really do – I'm more of an old-school type of guy. You know,
good
I like
you
to keep everything in my life
I wish
private.
I was. I wish know. I was.
Yeah, I mean, and I understand.
I get too
you know,
caught
we
up
work
in it
the media.
Sometimes.
Yeah, I understand we work in the media and you want to get things out there and all of that stuff. But things, especially in my private life, I like to keep private. You know, I'm not really the type of person to take pictures of everything that I'm doing and posting it. Like, I want to keep that private. You know,
I totally understand that. But you can always get in touch with us if you want. You can call a show, 803-0550, 888-550-2550. We do have to get to a couple more divisions. We'll do that. As we get to the next hour, we are going to have Evan Silva coming up from Roto World. He's going to join us here coming up at the top of the next hour at 2 o'clock. Donald and I have been talking about the non-AFC playoff teams that can contend possibly, if each one can contend, for either a wild card or a division. We've gone through the teams in the AFC South who didn't make it. We've gone through the teams in the AFC North who didn't make it. We're going to get to the AFC West. Now, however, is another edition of Stump Donald on the ESPYs. Are you ready?
All right.
All right, here we go. Okay, this is a good one. Let's see if you can tell me. This is the category best male college athlete. Best male college athlete.
Okay.
All right? Tell me what sport this athlete plays. Bonus points if you know what school he goes to or went to. All right? Some of these are hard. Some I think you can get.
All
okay?
Right.
There's five of them who are nominated. We'll start with one I think you can get. Frank Mason. Frank Mason. Oh, you don't know?
Are
you?
Let me guess, a baseball player.
No, he's a basketball player. You don't watch a lot of college basketball?
I do, but I still don't.
Kansas. He was super good last year.
Okay.
Frank Mason went to Kansas. All right, here's one I don't know if you doubt you're going to get, but Ian Harkus. Try and guess what sport Ian Harkus plays in college sports.
He plays lacrosse.
He plays soccer.
Oh.
He plays for an ACC school. Can you name it?
Good ACC school. Soccer, I have no clue. Duke.
Wake Forest, Wright State. I'll give you a half a point. All right. Here's a great name. Matt Rambo.
Matt Rambo.
Go back to the – you just – what sport did you just say? Matt
Lacrosse.
Rambo. Lacrosse, Maryland. Very good. Thank you. Okay. How about Zane Rutherford? You ever hear of him?
No.
Okay, I'll give you a hint. Think Sean McDermott.
Okay.
What sport?
So he wrestles.
Correct. And think of what state Sean McDermott is from, where he was state champion.
Pennsylvania. So he went to Penn State.
You're awesome at this game. See how easy that is? Finally,
I know Penn State.
Here's
is good
a really tough one for you. Best male college athlete nomination, Deshaun Watson. What sport? What school?
Deshaun Watson plays basketball, and he went to Syracuse. There you go.
Nah, one more for you before we hit on that. We're going to have Evan Silva come on. Best female tennis player. Best female tennis player. Just tell me yes or no if you've heard of any of these people. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Serena Williams.
Yeah.
Monica Puig.
Not really.
Jelena Ostapenko.
Definitely not.
Angelique Kerber. Mm-mm. I have not either. I'm so sorry.
And I wouldn't vote any of them over Serena anyway.
I know. Serena's got to win that, right?
Right. I mean, that's just a given.
You've heard of all best males, Federer, Murray, Nadal, and Wawrinka. We've
yeah,
heard of all them, right?
All,
all right. We'll get to some really good ones for Donald to choose who's going to win the big awards tonight. It is the ESPYs. But in the meantime, it's Evan Silva coming up next here on the John Murphy Show. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Sal Capaccio with Donald Jones. It is WGR and MSG on your TV.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Sal Capaccio here for John Murphy this week. Donald Jones with me today. And as always, Murph will be back next week. In the meantime, we'll tell you what's going on around the world of sports. Sam Darnold has basically said no NFL team should tank for him, although he does want to be the number one pick, I'm sure. And he also said a couple weeks ago that he may very well stay in college. So we'll see where that goes. But that's what he said. Aaron Rodgers on the other end of the spectrum. You got Sam Darnold, who's going to be a senior. Redshirt sophomore, right, at redshirt junior at USC. He's going to be going into his college season, but Aaron Rodgers says, I'm on the back nine of my NFL career. So that's not too unreasonable. I think that's right. Doesn't have many years left, but I think he's still got a few years left at a high level. Robinson Cano ended the All-Star game last night in the 10th inning with a home run for the American League. They win 2-1. They've won several of these things in a row. I think like five or six in a row now, the American League. Number one seed, Andy Murray, ousted by Sam Querrey at Wimbledon. All right, see, we've been playing this game, Donald. Be honest. Did you even know who Sam Querrey was? Because I did not.
Sam Querrey?
I know who Andy Murray is.
Right.
I didn't never heard of Sam Querrey. I hope I'm saying his name right. Sam, I apologize to you and your family if I'm saying it wrong. But I had no idea who that guy even was. But those are your sports headlines going on around right now. We're going to have Evan Silva join us here in just a moment. In fact, he's on right now the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh. Evan has been on this program, and he's been on with me on WGR many times. We love talking to him. He's a terrific, terrific follow on Twitter. He's a great writer over at Roto World and other outlets. So we're going to get his thoughts on the Buffalo Bills players headed into 2017 and some other things around the NFL as far as fantasy is concerned. So, Evan, thanks a lot. It's Sal and it's Donald Jones. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, guys, so much for having me on.
All right, Evan, well, let's get into it. The Buffalo Bills 2017 edition. We've spent a little time today talking about LeSean McCoy, who is 29 years old today. Today is LeSean's birthday. He's 29 years old. There's a narrative out there that, you know, he's a little bit beyond his years as a running back, and he's had a few injuries over the last few years. But really, the numbers say that LeSean McCoy the last few years has still ran at an elite level. What do you forecast for LeSean McCoy in 2017, and is he still a good fantasy play?
Absolutely, he is. I mean, I fully expect this offense to continue to be built around LeSean McCoy, who last year had one of the toughest run defense schedules in football, and this year the Bills project to have one of the softer run defense schedules in football. It's just going to, you know, LeSean McCoy catches a ton of passes. He plays in an offense where, you know, the Bills have a great offensive line. They return all five starters. They added the second round pick. I think his name is Deion Dawkins, mm-hmm. a big power blocking right tackle, who should be able to push Jordan Mills in training camp. Jordan Mills would probably be considered the weakest link on the line, but I mean, overall, it's a really, really good offensive line. And then you have the threat of Tyrod Taylor as a running quarterback, and that historically has always opened additional room for the running backs. I mean, you think back to Chris Johnson playing with Vince Young, you know, Marshawn Lynch. He was kind of like a disappointment in Buffalo, and then he goes and plays in Seattle with Russell Wilson. And you know, even playing when he was playing with Tavares Jackson, who could run a little bit, you know, that helped Marshawn Lynch kind of revive his career in Seattle. So just a lot of things working in the favor of LeSean McCoy. He showed us last year he averaged 5.5 carries against 8-man boxes. Just you know, playing at an elite running back level. And the only question is, will he continue to be able to stay healthy? Because he hasn't missed many games the past couple of years, but he has battled some injuries. Mm-hmm. I think he's kind of been a little bit lucky to not miss very much time. But I mean, he's a first round pick in fantasy football for sure this year.
Now, Evan, talk to us a little bit more. I think fans, especially here in the Western New York Buffalo area, really sleep on just how good the running game is and how important it is for Tyrod Taylor to be involved in this run game as well as the passing game.
Yeah, I mean, it's an elite running game. You know, you check all the different boxes. You have a quarterback that can run. You have a great run-blocking offensive line that is losing nothing. And you have a great back. You know, so it's just – it's an elite running game. They finished, I think, second in the NFL in rushing in consecutive years. The new OC, Rick Dennison, comes from the Gary Kubiak Shanahan coaching tree, which has also consistently produced big-time running game units historically. And, you know, the Bills over the last two seasons, their offense has become underrated. I mean, they finished 10th and 12th in the NFL in points scored the past 2 years. What they need to do is get their defense back together. And I think that everybody expected Rex Ryan to have a great defense in Buffalo. That just did not happen. That never materialized. They really struggled to stop the run defensively, and now they're bringing back a lot of the same personnel up front, and they have a lot of question marks defensively in the back seven, you know, at linebacker and in the secondary. So, you know, I don't it's going to be a very interesting year. You know, the Bills are in very much in a transitional state. They have a rookie head coach who seems like he's one of the most powerful coaches already in the NFL, considering that, you know, he kind of like won a power struggle against the GM, Doug Whaley, who is obviously no longer there, and was able to bring in his own guy, Brandon Bean, to be the GM. So the Bills are a very interesting organization to watch this year, and they are going to have some major, you know, this is a big year for Tyrod Taylor. I mean, he's essentially in a contract year, and, you know, they're going to make a decision after the season whether or not to commit to him long term.
You know, I want to talk a little bit about that running back position again and ask you about Mike Gillisley and what, you know, the Bills are losing and the Patriots are gaining. Where is he right now going in fantasy drafts, and how can you guys peg him? Because this seems like a really interesting type of guy that you might be able to either get as a surprise, a great value, or maybe he's being overvalued. You tell me about Mike Gillisley and what the Bills are losing and what the Patriots are gaining considering the different roles.
Yeah, I participate in a lot of early off-season fantasy drafts, and you know where Mike Gillisley is going seems to rise by the week. You know, there was a time where he was like a 9th and 10th round pick, and now he doesn't really get out of the 5th and 6th round. You know, people are anticipating him scoring a lot of touchdowns in that LeGarrette Blount role. The Patriots over the last 6 years have scored more rushing touchdowns than any team in football. They've averaged 18 rushing touchdowns per season during that stretch. And then last year, LeGarrette Blount, of course, led the NFL in rushing touchdowns with 18 himself. And Mike Gillisley right now is the favorite to occupy that role. He does have a lot of competition. Rex Burkhead, I think, is an underrated, versatile, all-purpose back. And they're bringing back Deion Lewis, and they've got James White to handle passing game duties. But, you know, at this point, you're almost paying a premium for Mike Gillisley, whereas last year you could get LeGarrette Blount in like the 10th, 11th, 12th rounds of fantasy drafts. You know, you're having to spend a 5th or 6th round pick on Mike Gillisley, and that really raises the risk for a guy who's not a lock for that, you know, that high touchdown scoring role. But he does look like the favorite right now. And so, I mean, I understand why people are trying to aggressively draft him.
Evan Silva joining us, Roto-World senior football editor, NBC sports writer and draft analyst, also 2017 fantasy football preview. You can read that. You can go to his Twitter feed at Evan Silva on Twitter. Wide receivers is a really interesting spot for the Bills as well, particularly because of Sammy Watkins. And we all know that he hasn't been able to stay on the field necessarily, but he has such tremendous talent. Give us your read on Watkins in this offense. And I'd like to know your opinion about Zay Jones coming in as a rookie on the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, I'm kind of skeptical about Zay Jones, you know, making that big jump from East Carolina into the NFL. He does benefit from being able to work with his college receivers coach. You know, that certainly should help him. But I don't anticipate him having a big year. You know, you go back and look at the statistics of Robert Woods. You know, pretty solid possession receiver in real life. In fantasy, he was never very good in Buffalo because of the nature of the way that they play. He never even reached 700 yards in a season, you know, in 4 years in Buffalo. And so that would seem to, you know, what Robert Woods was able to do the last 4 years would seem to be the ceiling for Zay Jones. And, I mean, you know, it's just I don't love rookie receivers. I mean, there have been – you know, examples of rookie receivers who have been tremendous, especially from that 2014 rookie class. But, you know, I don't like to invest a lot in them in fantasy football. And just the situation is not really conducive, barring another injury to Sammy Watkins, which, look, I mean, that's not something that is hard to imagine. But, you know, barring another injury to him, I mean, Zay Jones is probably not going to help you in fantasy. I think that Sammy Watkins is, you know, I mentioned earlier how the Bills are going to have to make a decision on Tyrod Taylor again pretty soon. They're going to have to do the same with Sammy Watkins. And they already, you know, kind of did make a decision on him by not exercising that fifth-year option. And that's scary to me. You know, it's like, what you know, what do they know that we don't know? And Sammy Watkins has undergone hip surgery and 2 foot surgeries over the past few off seasons. If the guy can stay healthy, I think he's going to dominate. I think that his game clicks really well with the strengths of Tyrod Taylor's game. And if you just look at his last 16 games, Sammy Watkins, I realize that there are like big gaps in between because of time that he has missed. But if you just go back and look at his last 16 games, I mean, he's, you know, easily a top 15 fantasy and real life receiver over that 16 game stretch. I think if we can get 14 games out of Sammy Watkins this year, I think we're going to see him do some special things on the football field. He needs it. You know, the Bills need it. And we would love it from a fantasy football standpoint.
Now, Evan, Sal brought up Zay Jones, obviously, because we don't know who the number two receiver is going to be, either him, Andre Holmes, you know, Corey Philly Brown. One of those guys has to step up and take over that number two receiving spot. But for me, you know, I guess since I've been here, I've always had faith in Charles Clay. Now, Evan, I know you study the entire league in fantasy. So under Rick Dennison and his offenses, how involved are the tight ends in the passing game?
Yeah, so the history of, you know, Rick Dennison, again, goes back to like Kubiak and Shanahan. Mm-hmm. And those guys have always had very productive tight ends. I mean, the most prominent one, of course, would be Shannon Sharp, you know, back in Denver with Mike Shanahan. And I believe that Rick Dennison was an assistant on those staffs as well. And then with Gary Kubiak, like Owen Daniels had a bunch of very productive seasons under Gary Kubiak in Houston. So there's definitely some precedent there for, you know, tight ends to be productive in this style of offense. With Charles Clay, it just seems like he hasn't clicked, you know, consistently with Tyrod Taylor. And Sean McDermott mentioned how they have like lingering concerns about Charles Clay's knee, which I think has only cost him 6 games over the past 3 years, but it has been an issue. It's cost him a ton of practice time. You know, maybe that is one of the reasons why Tyrod Taylor and Charles Clay haven't fully clicked. I mean, I remember Joe Buscaglia or Buscaglia, you know, one of the best writers on the Bills beat. He's mentioned how, you know, during his game tape reviews, there will be, you know, like Charles Clay will be open in the middle of the field and, you know, Tyrod Taylor is not looking at him. You know, he's not throwing him the ball. So, I don't love Charles Clay as a fantasy pick, but, you know, what you want, I think, as a Bills supporter is for Charles Clay to stay healthy and to, you know, make the most of his opportunities because they are going to need another guy. You know, even if Sammy Watkins stays healthy, they're going to need another possession target. I don't know if Zay Jones is ready for that. And so, you know, Charles Clay would be the likeliest candidate if he's healthy to, you know, kind of assume that role. It's very possible that with Robert Woods gone, Charles Clay's role increases a little bit this year.
Evan Silva joining us here on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Evan, we're going to be very interested in 2 different teams here in Buffalo this year. One is the Bills, of course. The other is the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, I grew up in Buffalo. I was going to Bills games and through the Super Bowl years and even before that. And this is the first time I can remember, even though the Bills have had two number one picks in the past, they usually gain them somewhere along the way. This is the first time I remember going into a season where I know they're going to have 2 number one picks and I can follow another team and Bills fans can follow another team. You had some really interesting tweets last week about the Kansas City Chiefs and what you feel about them. And Bills fans are going to be super interested in watching Kansas City this year. And oh, by the way, we can. They're on primetime a lot. So what is your thought about Kansas City? And do you think the Bills have a chance to have a decent pick here out of Kansas City in 2018?
Yeah, I think that Kansas City looks like a team right now that is a good bet to kind of take a step back. They have some organizational dysfunction. You know, this is a team that fired their GM, fired a bunch of front office guys earlier in the offseason, and then fired their GM after the draft, which is not something that you see very often. They were forced to cut their number one wide receiver, Jeremy Maclin, due to salary cap reasons. I mean, they put themselves in a really, really bad salary cap spot. And, you know, they looked at older players on their roster like Tom Bahali and Derek Johnson. Those guys' salaries are guaranteed. So so they couldn't cut those guys. They had to cut their best player at a position group. The Bills or the Chiefs have the second toughest schedule this season, according to our projections. And I think it's kind of likely that we're going to see Patrick Mahomes at some point this year.
Wow.
First of all, first-round quarterbacks play much more often than, you know, we often hear, you know, Blake Bortles, Carson Wentz, these guys aren't going to play. These guys end up playing much, much, much more often than not. And the Chiefs, by trading up for Patrick Mahomes, are telling us what they think about Alex Smith. And look, the Chiefs, because of their salary cap situation, they are going to have to make another move next offseason to clear a bunch more space. Hmm. And the likeliest candidate to go would be Alex Smith because of what the Chiefs just did in the draft. And that would clear $17 million off the books next year and put the Chiefs back into a healthy salary cap situation. So, you know, if this team is below 500, which I think is conceivable considering the fact that they have such a difficult schedule, below 500 with like a, you know, a month to go left in the season, I think we're going to see Patrick Mahomes play. The Chiefs are going to want to evaluate Patrick Mahomes. And, again, first-round quarterbacks, they get on the field as rookies. So I think that the Chiefs are a team that I think will end up in the 7-9 win range. And I like the, like Vegas sports books release win totals before the season for every NFL team. And I like the under on the Chiefs at 9.5 wins. And that, of course, you know, if that does come to fruition, that would be good news for the Bills.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It would be nice if the Bills had those. They have those two first-round picks. It would be nice if one of them was in the top half of the draft there. All right, Evan, I know it says here you were halfway done in your latest tweet on your fantasy football team preview. Is it done yet, or when can we expect it, and where do we go to get it?
It's just right on my Twitter page. It's on rotoworld.com. I'm going team by team.
Okay.
So I'm done with like 18 right now, 18 out of 32. I'm a little bit past halfway. But you can check that out at rotoworld.com or at Evan Silva on Twitter.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Always enjoy talking with you. It's that time of year again. Football's right around the corner. Fantasy football's around the corner. So that means we're going to be having a lot of fun over the next few months. Thanks a lot, Evan.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you. That is Evan Silva. He is a senior editor over at Roto World, doing a great job over there, NBC Sports writer as well. You play fantasy football?
No, not at all.
You need to play.
You know, I really don't have the patience to do it. I don't. Like, I don't have the patience to sit and watch all of the injuries and everything that happens week in and week out and have to worry about, oh, man, I got to go back and do my fantasy team and make sure this guy started.
That does happen. You're right.
Oh, I just don't have it in me.
It is kind of fun, though.
I'm sure it is. You know? Other people that – like, I have friends that have four different teams.
Right, right.
I'm like, how are you doing that?
Yeah.
What else are you doing?
Every year I have two in two big leagues that I'm in, and that's it.
I don't know how you do it.
I don't know.
I mean, I know you cover the league.
But here's, you know why, Donald? But the other thing is, for me, I've always found, it's a great way to stay on top of the league. Like, being in fantasy football helps you know about the league.
Mm-hmm.
And if I come here and do a show, and someone brings up a guy from the Raiders, I'm like, yeah, that dude's been hurt lately.
Yeah.
Because I know.
Because you know.
And it helps my job, right?
No, I definitely understand that side of it. You also cover the Bills and cover the games and stuff. And you don't only cover the Bills. Like, do you call UB games?
I call, UB basketball, football games.
I mean, you do a lot.
But I do a lot of stuff like that. But, you know, I'll tell you what. It is really cool in that regard. What I don't like, though, and a lot of people are like this these days, what I don't like, I hate it, is when someone tells you, I'd rather my fantasy team win than the real team I root for in the NFL.
You're starting to hear that a lot more.
I just want to smack people like that.
It really is sad. It's like,
slap some sense into them.
Yeah, man. You know, or when you have, someone that has Tom Brady on their team. They're a Bills fan, but they got Tom Brady as their quarterback. And it's like, yeah, I really want Tom Brady to have a great game, but I want the Bills to win. What are you talking about right now?
No, you can't be like that. I agree with you 100%. All right, so we're going to have a couple more teams here we have to get to, a couple more divisions for the non-AFC playoff teams from last year. We'll do the AFC East last because there are two teams, obviously, one of them being the Buffalo Bills, but let's go to the AFC West, a division we've talked about several times today in different contexts. The Denver Broncos are coming off a Super Bowl championship, and then they drop 9-7, not a bad season, but they don't make the playoffs. And because of that, after that, they have a coaching change. They have a quarterback change that we know of. We don't know who's going to be their starting quarterback.
Yeah.
Is it going to be Trevor Siemian? Is it going to be Paxton Lynch? Is it going to be even Chad Kelly, which I doubt, but he's there, right?
Chad Kelly coming back to Buffalo.
That's right. So, you know, we'll see what they do in Denver. But at 9-7, rookie head coach, a little bit of a turnover there, a little bit of a roster change. The biggest thing for me, for them, is they're also losing Wade Phillips. I think that's a big
that's
deal
for them.
That's
a big deal for that defense. Yeah. Like, they've had one of the best defenses in the league for the last few years. But losing that defensive coordinator is tough, man. Those guys, it's like you have your entire defense. The defensive coordinator knows the strengths and weaknesses of the guys on that defense, you know. And now bringing in a new guy, it's going to take him some time to learn, okay, this player can do this, so I know I can call this defense. And I know we might have a hole right here, but I know this linebacker can drop back into that gap. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it, you know. So I think they're going to be down this year. I really do. They don't know who the quarterback is going to be. It's going to be either Paxton Lynch or Trevor Siemian. You know, who knows? Maybe Chad Kelly can challenge for a spot here. I mean,
if that happens, they're going to be bad. And that's not against Chad, but Chad, but to put a rookie drafted the last pick of the draft would tell me that you're basically starting over and you're going to let him take his lumps.
Exactly. The only thing that they have on the positive side of things is their defense.
Mm-hmm.
But you have the downside of that, which is they lost their defensive coordinator. So I don't
know
what
they're
going to
be. Who's a great one, by the way.
Right. So I don't know how good they're going to be out there. And that division, you would think that, you know, Kansas City, Oakland would be at the top.
Yeah, I agree. I don't like Denver this year. I think when they come to Buffalo, I'm glad the Bills are getting them early in the season before maybe they can get acclimated to that new coaching staff, to, you know, new quarterback, whoever that may be. Let's also remember, they lost their offensive coordinator to the Bills. The Bills, he's here. Rick Dennison was their offensive coordinator. And as, you know, I think it was it Warren Sharp who said it? Maybe Evan Silva, one of our last two guests, said he's going to love going from Denver to Buffalo because they didn't have much of a run game. And how about that? C.J. Anderson 2 years ago tore up the league.
Yeah,
and then last year, what happened?
Nothing.
They didn't have the offensive line, I guess. You know, they didn't do a lot of the same things they were able to do 2 years ago. So I don't expect Denver to be – I think they'll be okay. I mean, they're probably around a 500 team. I don't expect them to challenge for the AFC West title. They'll be with a group of teams looking for a wild card, but probably in the end ultimately fall short to me.
Fall short. I think I have to go there with you as well. I think they're going to fall short. I think they'll have, like you said, they'll be around 500 just because of the defense, the talent that they have on defense. And they have talent at receiver as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be able to score some touchdowns, but they don't have a running game. And they lost their defensive and offensive coordinator. So,
well, we're going to look at the other team in the West when we come back. And that is a team that's been getting a lot of people saying, I kind of like them sneaky good this year. I'm not so sure. The LA Chargers and a guy named Anthony Lynn who's going there, coming from Buffalo, obviously, to be their head coach. A lot of people really like the Chargers this year. We'll find out what Donald thinks. Sal Capaccio here for John Murphy. We'll be back on the other side of this timeout.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Sal Capaccio with Donald Jones here on the John Murphy Show. Presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are running through the non-playoff teams from last year and how well they may do this year and if they can contend. Before we get to our next group, we want to get to Real News Fake News here, Donald. Real News Fake News brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. All right, Real News Fake News. Let's get to topic number one. That is, let me just check here. Okay, NFC East, thank you. NFC East is, somebody said here, I forget who says these things, but people put it out there. The NFC East is the best division in the NFL in 2017. Right now, going into 2017, the NFC East is the best division in football. Real news, fake news. Cowboys, Eagles, Redskins.
I got to go fake on that.
Giants.
I think, obviously, the Cowboys and the Giants are good teams, and those are two teams that are really going to challenge for a playoff spot. But I think the South is a good division.
Yeah.
And then you look at the NFC North. I mean, you never really know what you're going to get out of there. the NFC North, and even out in the West. You know, you still have Seattle. Arizona, you would think, would be a better team than they were last year. Nobody expected them to be how they were last year. So I think overall the NFC is a tough conference. I don't think the NFC East is necessarily the best division in there.
They say it's a quarterback league. We know that. I think if you're talking just quarterbacks, the NFC South is, which may, might put them in the lead there with Matt Ryan, excuse me.
Yeah, Matt Ryan, Cam Newton.
Cam, Jameis, Drew Brees.
Woof,
right? Yeah. But look, the NFC East is really good, and it's close. I mean, I might have to agree, just team for team, they might be better. But I got to lean towards the group that has those four quarterbacks,
South,
I think, the South,
and,
right?
And
but that's
listen,
it is
people
close.
People are sleeping on Tampa is a good
–
I mean, we
good.
Had a lot of people tweet in James and Winston. Say Tampa is going to be a team in the playoffs that wasn't in last year. That is a good team right there. And they brought in DeSean Jackson and draft O.J. Howard. Yeah,
right.
Along with Mike Evans out there. That's going to be a good team.
And they come to Buffalo
watch.
This year. Fred Taylor is a Hall of Famer. Real news or fake news, I believe it was Mark Brunell who said it. Fred Taylor, the former running back for the Jacksonville Jaguars – is a Hall of Famer and should be in the Hall of Fame, according to Mark Brunell, I believe, again. And is that real news or fake news?
I think that's a good debate.
It's a very good debate.
Now, what other running backs are still out there that can go in?
Right, I got to check. I mean, Curtis Martin got in, or I think he might have. I have to look. I don't remember for sure.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. So I'm looking over his stats. 6 1,200-yard rushing seasons. That's pretty good.
That is good.
7 over 1,100 yards, 6 over 1,200 yards. He ran, in his career, he finished with over 11,000 rushing yards, but he also caught the ball in the backfield. He had another 2,300 yards receiving.
He should be a finalist at least. I don't know if he should be inducted, but he should be in conversation.
Curtis Martin did
make
the Hall of Fame, yes.
Being a finalist, yeah, I thought he was in. Yeah, I think it's a debate. He should be at least a finalist and be talked about.
He should be. Look, I'll tell you, that for what you just said, that's right. And I'm looking over his numbers. I initially wanted to say no. Then I'm thinking about it. I'm looking over his numbers. I'm like, man, those are Hall of Fame numbers, right? I mean, here's the guys. If you go to Pro Football Reference, great site, they basically take every player, even you, Donald. They'll have your stats, and then they'll say who you compare to after your first year in the league,
who you
compare to after your second. Here's Fred Taylor for his career. He's got guys like Ernest Byner, Otis Anderson, Eddie George, Herschel Walker, nice players. Mm-hmm. But he's also compared to Hall of Famers, Curtis Martin, Eric Dickerson, John Riggins, and Larry Zonka.
Yeah.
That's great company. So I would say that there is no doubt Mark Brunell at least makes a solid argument that Fred Taylor should be in the Hall of Fame. That's real news.
Yeah, so real news.
I'd say real news. We could make that argument for Fred Taylor. Mm-hmm. Boy, I loved watching him play. He was great.
And I was young.
Yeah.
When he was playing.
98, I think he came in the league.
Yeah, I was very young. But he's definitely good to watch. And I get to talk to guys like Aaron Beasley and those guys that were on the team with him about him. And they're like, man, this dude was good. Very underrated because he played for Jacksonville.
Right.
But he was good.
Agreed. No doubt about it. Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to get back to our teams that did not make the playoffs in 2016 that could make it in 2017, or at least we're going to debate if they can. The Chargers are a team flying under the radar, according to a lot of people, Donald. A lot of people say this is a team to watch. They're sneaky good this year. I don't see it as much. I do still love Phillip Rivers, although he's getting up there in age. I know their defense added some. Excuse me, added some parts. Joey Bosa had a great year last year.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think they need Keenan Allen to stay healthy.
Yep, for sure.
They definitely need him to stay healthy. You know, obviously, they drafted Mike Williams. We haven't seen – he's been hurt the entire offseason. Mm-hmm. So we don't know what we're going to get out of Mike Williams. They also brought in Artavius Scott. They still have Travis Benjamin, who's a good wide receiver, fast dude out there in Los Angeles now. They still have Antonio Gates on the offensive side of the ball. They just really haven't been – I mean, they have Melvin Gordon. They haven't been a team that really can put it all together year in and year out. It's usually towards the end of the season where they really start to – it's like they're always in a position to knock a team out of the playoffs, right? And they play Oakland always good. They play Denver always good. They play Kansas City good because they're divisional games. They have some good talent on the defensive side of the ball as well. I don't know if they have enough, though, to challenge for winning that division, beating Oakland. And I think there are just going to be so many other teams ahead of them in the wild card race.
I agree with you. This may be just a simple case of, look, they've won 5 games last year. I mean, what are you looking at, right? I mean, they lost a lot of close games. They had the lead in the fourth quarter in a lot of these games last year, and they wound up losing. But What are you looking at? You're looking at a tough division. You want to talk about tough divisions? The West and the AFC is a tough division.
It's a tough division.
It's going to be hard to crack that thing, right? So, I mean, I don't know. I don't see it. I don't think LA, I knew I was going to do that, gets back to the playoffs this year. But a lot of people are saying that they're going to be a lot better. And by the way, we go there this year with the Bills and the radio and all that. Mm-hmm. They're playing in like a 30,000-seat soccer stadium.
Yeah, they are.
That's going to be weird.
That's going to be a different environment. It's going to be like, wow, like it's only 30,000. It's like a basketball game.
It's weird. At Los Angeles against the Chargers on November 19th for the Buffalo Bills. The final team we have to discuss because, of course, we discuss the Bills every day. They didn't make the playoffs. The New York Jets.
The New York
no
Jets.
No chance they make the playoffs in 2017.
No, I really feel bad period. For Todd Bowles. I really feel bad for Todd Bowles because they've stripped this thing all the way down.
Yep.
Seems like they're trying to do what Cleveland
yep.
has done for they the last are. Couple of years. They've stripped it all the way down. Some of the guys that they've recently released, I mean, you know, a guy like Harris out there and Eric Decker that they yep. released in the last couple of weeks. It's like, come on, man. Like, now you're just being disrespectful. Like, at least release those guys back in March when free agency is big and everybody, you know, you have a lot more teams with money that might want to sign these guys. Now, they both still ended up getting signed, but come on, man. Like, they did those guys wrong. I think the position that Todd Bowles is in right now, I even think it might be more of a power struggle between him and the front office and who he wants to play quarterback and who they want to play
Could
quarterback.
Very well be.
I think he's in a tough position. He probably will end up making it through this season, but I don't see him as the head coach next year unless just something miraculously happens.
There's no reason to get rid of him right now if you've already stripped everything down. Why? I mean, you just let
right.
him finish
just
it out.
Just let him finish it
and
out.
And if for but some reason he can muster an 8-win season, that would be remarkable. Then you keep
oh, yeah.
the guy. And
right.
you say, oh, my God, look what he did with what we gave him, right?
Right.
I don't
right.
see that happening either.
I don't see it happening. But I tell you this. Week one here in Buffalo, if they come in here and beat the
That's
Bills.
That's not going to happen, right?
It's not going to happen. We hope it doesn't happen. But if it does, oof. I mean, the media will eat that up.
Here and there, by the way.
Right.
Oh,
national
my gosh.
Media will eat
I love the week one opponent for the Bills. I think that's a team that they can beat and should beat.
Right.
And that would be a nice start to Sean McDermott. They always say your biggest improvement in football is from week one to week two every year. Right.
Mm-hmm.
After you get that one game under your belt,
mm-hmm.
that's a nice week one game to have to put under your belt, I think. I don't think it's going to be easy. There are no easy games in this league, but I certainly think the Bills roster is better than the New York Jets roster.
You have to believe they don't know who their quarterback is going to be
right
now. I would think. I mean, I know they want to give Hackenberg a try. They paid McCown somewhat. They gave him like $6 mm-hmm. million this year or something like that. So, you know, both of those guys are going to battle it out. But like you said, that is a good opponent for the Bills. They should beat them at home opener, opening week of the season. They should beat them at home. And then Coach McDermott gets to go back down to Carolina and face his old team that he knows everything about.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully they can start off 2-0.
That would be tremendous with Denver coming here in week number 3. All right, Donald, we've run through all the non-AFC playoff teams not named the Buffalo Bills in 2017. So I'll put you back on the spot. Let's do a little fun with Donald and the ESPYs, all right? I'm going to make it a lot easier on you now. I'm just going to give you the category and the athlete you'd predict who you think will win and tell me why.
Okay.
All right? Tell me who you would vote for in these categories. The Best Male Athlete Award, Chris Bryant from Major League Baseball, Sidney Crosby, Michael Phelps, or Russell Westbrook?
I like Russell Westbrook.
You think he had the best? Who's like the MVP of that group? Who's had the best year?
Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
For him to do what he did in the NBA, all those triple-doubles, to average a triple-double throughout the season,
it's
not
amazing,
get hurt.
Right?
I mean, he's the only dude on that team, really.
Yeah.
So for him to be able to do it
Chris,
for the
Sidney Crosby, to me, would be a tough pass.
Right.
I mean, he's amazing, but I wouldn't have no problem with Russell Westbrook winning that. Best female athlete, Simone Biles, Katie Ledecky, Candace Parker, or Serena Williams?
Serena Williams.
Gotta
I know,
Serena,
I know
right?
Simone Biles can challenge for that with all of the medals that she got out in the Olympics, but Serena just, I mean, she's like a lock for that thing every year. Maybe they'll give it to Simone Biles or somebody else just because it's like, listen, Serena, you win every award every year.
We'll get to more of this in a minute, but Craig in Rochester wants to chime in on the L.A. Chargers, who we failed to mention, by the way. Anthony Lynn, former Bills offensive
right.
coordinator, is now their new head coach. Go ahead, Craig. You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hey, guys. I think the Chargers, I kind of agree that they get a little overhyped to me. They're like the Saints of the AFC. You know, very potentially great offense with a quarterback who could drive, you know, really, really fun offense. But the defense has some pieces, but I just – you look at their own division, I like the Chiefs and Raiders better. They won five games. It's, yep. like you guys said, I think they need a lot to go right, kind of like the Saints, where same type of thing. That division has a lot of just better teams. Not that they don't have good quarterbacks, but there's just not enough there to make me want to believe they'll be any better than maybe 7-9.
I don't disagree at all. I think that's about what we're looking at with San Diego. Thanks for the call, Craig. I think that's a division that's tough to crack, like I said, and I don't know. Every year, every time it seems like we think San Diego's going to be pretty good, they don't just fall short of expectations, and I think they're in a transition year. They're moving cities. That matters, Donald.
It does.
I mean, come on. That's a lot on that organization.
Mm-hmm. They have a lot. They have a lot that they have to handle. They had to move from, yep. I mean, it's not like they moved to a different state, but they are moving to a different city. They're playing in a totally different environment. It's not really a football environment.
No.
I mean, yeah, they have, they're going to have a probably exciting offense, but I don't know what they have on defense. And quite frankly, I just don't think that they're good enough to challenge the rest of those teams, not even Denver. They might be able to beat Denver, but not Oakland and Kansas City.
Another team the Bills will have on their schedule and a chance to try and knock off, as they both fight for a wild card. Mm-hmm. Donald, best championship performance. Here is the category tonight, and they will award it tonight, the ESPYs. This is great. This is a good one. Who had the best championship performance? Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, Kevin Durant in the NBA Finals, Shea Knighton in the Women's College World Series. I have no idea what she did. I'm really sorry. Or Deshaun Watson in the national championship game in football.
Give me the first ones again.
Brady,
mm-hmm.
Durant, Shea Knighton, or Deshaun Watson. Best performance in a championship game or series?
I got to go with Durant, you know. And the reason that I go with Durant is because just the year he had last year, like he essentially didn't show up. He choked last year, which is why,
right,
OKC didn't go on to beat Golden State. This year he came to play every game,
yep,
you know, and then he came through with those huge, huge shots at the end of the game that closed it all out. So I think I have to go with Kevin Durant.
All right. Best breakthrough athlete. The Greek freak, who I can't say his name in the NBA. Lauri Hernandez in gymnastics. Aaron Judge, Major League Baseball. Dak Prescott in the NFL. Or Christian Pulisic. I don't know how to say it. I apologize for all you soccer nuts out there who are really mad at me for that in soccer.
You know, I know this is going to be totally contradictory to what we said earlier when we talked about Dak Prescott. I'm going to go with Dak Prescott. Mm-hmm. And I know it's definitely contradictory because we were like, we don't really know what he is. He has that great offensive line. But at the end of the day, he still had a very good season.
That's right.
A very good season for America's team and the Dallas Cowboys. It's not easy to play quarterback in that city. And to dethrone Tony Romo, I think he is probably the best breakthrough athlete.
That's a good choice. You made a great point when I read you these during the break. You said Aaron Judge hasn't played a full season yet, so how
right.
can you really
can't
go
really,
with him
yeah,
yet, right?
Something
I know.
Can happen this or next week. He can get hurt, and then what? Somebody else.
I mean, the Greek freak, when you earn a nickname,
yeah,
and it's pretty good. That's breaking through, right?
That is definitely
you earn
breaking,
a nickname, that's breaking through.
Through.
We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll talk about what we've learned today, and we'll wrap it up with a couple more of these ESPY categories here on the John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Brought to you by Advanced Alarm, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We learned what a lot of our different guests thought about LeSean McCoy, who, by the way, turned 29 today. That's why we talked a lot about him. Warren Sharp came aboard, Sharp Football. He talked about his 2016 season and what LeSean McCoy really did and how impressive it was.
For LeSean McCoy to produce that season that he produced, look, in the 7 years since the NFL became a more pass-heavy league, since 2010 when they changed the hit rules, you can't hit the quarterback slate, you can't hit the receivers, causing all these concussions over the middle of the field, there have only been five running backs to run for at least 175 rushing attempts, average at least 5 yards per carry, and score 10 rushing touchdowns. Only five of them, including LeSean McCoy last year. The other four guys all received either MVP, they were the NFL's MVP, or they were first-team All-Pros.
Wow.
LeSean McCoy didn't get one single vote for first-team All-Pro last season. I think it was a complete joke. He was the heart and soul of that team.
Pretty amazing right there. What about 2017? Evan Sylvan from Roto World joined us on LeSean McCoy.
Absolutely, he is. I mean, I fully expect this offense to continue to be built around LeSean McCoy, who last year had one of the toughest run defense schedules in football, and this year the Bills project to have one of the softer run defense schedules in football. It's just going to, you know, LeSean McCoy catches a ton of passes. He plays in an offense where, you know, the Bills have a great offensive line. They return all five starters.
Thanks a lot to Evan Silva and Warren Sharp for joining us here today. Sal Capaccio, Donald Jones. Mark, call us back tomorrow. I know you're waiting. I don't want to cut you short, but we got to get running out of here. And he wants to talk McGregor and Mayweather. That's going to be fun. But, the press conference yesterday, Mark likes to talk about that stuff. So give us a call tomorrow. Maybe we'll make a little side topic out of that with Donald here. All right, real quick. Only got a minute or so left. So I'm going to give you the last couple of categories for this SB thing tonight. Best upset. This is great. Clemson beating Alabama mm-hmm. in the national championship game, Dennis Istomin beating Novak Djokovic in the Australian Open second round, or Mississippi State beating UConn in the women's Final Four. What was the best upset? I agree, UConn. Right?
Yeah.
That has to be. That's an all-time upset.
That is an all-time upset. Mississippi State over UConn women? Oh, man. UConn was like a lock to win it.
Yeah, you could put that up there, but greatest upsets in history of sports,
right.
That could win it.
Exactly.
Because of their winning streak over 100 games at the time. Mm-hmm. Best game. What was the best game this past year? Cubs-Indians World Series Game 7, Patriots-Falcons Super Bowl, Federer-Nadal Australian Open Final, which was incredible.
I like the Patriots-Falcons Super Bowl, you know, just how bad Brady was playing, and for him to come back at the end of that game, that was a great game to watch.
They also have best comeback. That's us. We're back tomorrow, 12 noon, right here on John Murphy Show. You like how I did that?
Yeah.
All right, thanks a lot. We got Adam Rank from NFL Network tomorrow. Show up with the Bulldog up next on our WGR 550 flagship station in Buffalo.